It was good, very good. 12-hour drive yesterday, back. Well,
Nice.
4 hours, 4 hours in the car driving, 4 hours ferry, and then 4 hours driving again. We got back sort of four-ish. Then we had to go to a party because it was 10 minutes down the road, and then
Oh,
got
you
back
don't want to be
late and
going to your
unpacked.
mother-in-law's after 12 hours of travel. That's not right.
So yeah, I was pretty, I was zombie-like. So I had a good night's sleep. And overslept this morning. We feel a bit better now. But recovering, not only with tiredness, getting over that, but just having internet again, because it isn't ideal. Just for, and not even for work or anything. I wasn't really working, although I was doing, replying to the odd email. It's just you sort of forget. You do get very complacent and forget about internet connectivity. And so when you don't have it, it's like the simple things, just really simple things like GPS and stuff. If you haven't got stuff downloaded or use TomTom or something. So we had this. We were in this little place near in Kerry called Kenmare, and it's like an old B&B that's been into like a chalet type thing. So there was three adults and then yeah, and a dog. Oh, three dogs. So our dog and then my sister. So we drove. You sort of drive up this really like farm track, really dodgy track. And Kerry is very nice and very beautiful and very mountainous. And there are lots of roads that you don't want to be. You need to be paying attention when you're going around corners because there's the idea of barriers is like sort of a couple of stones, and then it's like a it can vary from a 20-foot to a couple of 100-foot drop. Although
Yeah,
some of
it's
the
like
bigger
driving on the
drops,
Isle of Man.
yes, yeah, exactly. So we got there and there was Wi-Fi, which was cool. I thought excellent. So you immediately first thing you do when you arrive is unlock the door and connect to the Wi-Fi, and check the speed, which was a couple of meg, but that was okay. But it was one of these. I don't know if it was a hotspot. It was a Vodafone branded router, which makes me think it was a weird 3G type thing. But there's no aerials on it. This was the thing. There's no aerials on the box. The box has got a, what looks like an Ethernet cable or it looks like an RJ45 cable coming from a room next door. So the woman that owns this place does like pottery and crafting and stuff. And it's like a typical type chalet slash Airbnb type thing where you might have certain rooms or places that are locked because, they dump all their precious stuff out, or they just don't want you in there. And the cable sort of went round this sort of, it was almost like a hotel reception area with a little type of bar type thing. Went round the sort of wall and then disappeared into this room next door. So we suspect that, because we were restarting the router, essentially what was happening was the ping was just appalling. You were getting like 25,000 ping, 10,000 ping, 200 ping, 20 ping, nothing, nothing for 20 pings, and then another big lot. So you're just getting these little spots of data. So you'd get like a message come through, an email push notification would come through or something because they're tiny, and so they come through, and you think ah. And then when you actually click it to go into the app, of course, the app then has to sync, and then the app hasn't got a connection to sync, so you can't do that. So things like photos and just all kinds of things were going crazy. I was restarting the thing. Luckily, all the login details were there, so you could log on to the admin and see what was going on. But I was restarting it, but I suspect there's some other box that was in that room that was the thing that actually needed kicking, restarting, reconfiguring or something, because that's the thing that's somehow routing into this thing. Because it
Yeah, makes
otherwise it
sense.
looks like it's a broadband, otherwise. The Vodafone bit is the sort of weird bit because it looks just like a normal broadband router, but it's Vodafone branded, and we all know what Vodafone does. So you immediately think middle of Ireland, middle of nowhere. This is going to be. So I suspect there was something in that other room that either the cable could have been dodgy, could have been a pinch cable because it was going through the door, could have been something weird. But yeah, it was just very. It's amazing how frustrating it is considering we lived without this stuff years ago. You just come to
It's hard to
completely rely
remember
on
what
it.
it was like when you had
Yes.
no internet.
I know, it's
Like
just.
when you had internet at 6 o'clock at night, because that's when you could get free internet
Yeah.
on dial-up.
Yeah.
Like you
Yeah.
waited all day to go,
Yeah.
oh, I've gotta load up my internet so I can get the Zelda
Yeah.
walkthrough.
Mom,
And
can you get off the
nowadays it's like,
phone? Your mum or dad pick up the phone. Is like, you're like, can you get off the phone? I've just taken me 10 minutes to dial in.
God, this JPEG's taking hours to download.
Yeah, and then the other thing, of course, is that all of us had iPhones. So we've all got our iPhones. I've got my iPads. I've got my laptop, which is just in case. And of course, it's a Wi-Fi connection. So what happens on a Wi-Fi connection is all your devices suddenly go, yeah, let's start syncing stuff and doing downloads. And so the apps are
Yeah.
all failing to install stuff. The
That's got
photos,
worse
yeah,
over the
the
years
photos are
as this
failing
has
to
been happening.
upload. So I'm back to reality now, which is. And also, I always get. And it must be just me, because I'm not sure other people get this, but wherever I travel, if I go to Europe or I go to Ireland, my 3G's terrible as well. It's like really spotty. You know, I might get 3 or 4 pips on the sort of bar, which, you know, says 3G. I'm on the 3 network, because I was in Southern Ireland, so I'm on 3. And I was just getting very, very bad data, you know, equally as bad as I was getting, well, not as bad, but it could be as bad as I was getting in the house. You know, things just weren't loading and installed. A couple of apps hung, and it was just, yeah, it makes you realise how lucky you are.
A lot of the time I find with going abroad, like I go to Disney World a lot in Florida, and I've got the, you know, Roam Anywhere with 3 thing. Yeah. But the problem is that their partner is AT&T, who is the worst providers, especially at Disney World. Got a huge number of people in one place that are all using their phones, all connected to the network. So it's always terrible. And then because you're piggybacking off their network, I'm pretty sure that you're low down the priority list when there's lots of people connecting, because you're, you know, you're part of a roaming deal. They're not going to, you very rarely get like 4G speeds anywhere where you go when you're roaming. And so I tend to use the Wi-Fi there, and they've got Wi-Fi in all of their parks now, and all the hotels. Now, the hotels, it's great because it's not that many people, but in like the middle of the theme park, when everyone is connected to the Wi-Fi, and like you say, everyone's phones are constantly syncing, and that becomes really problematic with iOS, because you're doing things like, oh, let me just film Timmy going round the Haunted Mansion in 4K.
Yeah,
film
exactly.
The whole ride for 10 minutes, and then you put your phone in your pocket, and meanwhile, your phone is uploading, you know, a gig and a half of data up to the cloud, because it's like, oh, you're on Wi-Fi, let's sync this photo library up. And so the Wi-Fi, everyone's using it, and all they're doing, oh, great. Really, there needs to be a way to sort of say when Wi-Fi is home Wi-Fi and when it's not home Wi-Fi, kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
Would sort of work the same way that low power mode does get turned off, because it shouldn't be automatically syncing everything when you're on Wi-Fi that can't handle it. Now, ideally, they should find a way to make that automatic in settings, because that can cause problems. But you've got to think that must be a solution somewhere. Even if it's just like when you connect to Wi-Fi and it's got one of those captive login portal things, you know, free Wi-Fi or coffee shop Wi-Fi, so don't sync it.
I mean,
to have that intelligence, yeah.
It might be nice if there was a sort of trusted Wi-Fi type option, so you could say, you know, my home SSID, and maybe when I go somewhere else, that a friend's place or whatever, these are trusted ones that I trust, and so for the trusted ones, those are the ones where that syncing takes place. Because the recent thing I had was, I've had to rethink how I do video stuff now, because I'm trying to film more stuff in 4K, just because you can on the iPhone, and it just seems crazy, especially with kids. So I know that looking back at HD is not going to be that compared to what we had in the, or nothing. But still, you know, if you've got 4K available, might as well record it in the best thing I can. But like you say, these are huge files. And, you know, I had my son's birthday party a late sort of friend's school birthday party, because his birthday's in December. And I sort of bought some cheap, I've already got a GoPro, Hero 5 and a 4. So the 4 is not HD, not 4K. It does 2.7K, and the 5 is 4K. Right. And then I also bought 2 of these 8-man 4K cameras, which are super cheap from, you know, they look like GoPros. They're like crappy GoPros, basically. Very plasticky. The software's crap. Real pain in the backside to use, and there's no sort of proper apps. You have to use some third-party thing. But they film 4K video, and they're not bad. And to stick on the kids' bikes, you know, they're pretty good. So suddenly I have all this footage. You know, I've got footage from the front of his bike, the back of his bike. I've got footage from my bike. I've got some drone stuff I was doing. I've got all this 4K footage. And of course, the stuff that you then sync it, or you sort of bring it onto the laptop, and then I start dropping it into iPhotos. And all of a sudden, that was it for 3 days, you know, because all of these photos are going up and down, and I couldn't share it with my wife to show him some of the stuff, until it was synced. Obviously now there's about 40 or 50 gigs worth of footage, which is all raw footage. It's not necessarily stuff you want to keep, all of it. That's the problem. And so now I need to pull it back, and I've started storing stuff on a network drive, and then I'll probably, you know, filter through it, delete all the crap, keep the good stuff, and then sync that up. Because otherwise, you know, I've got, what, a terabyte, I think, on iCloud at the moment. I haven't done the 2 terabytes yet. But, you know, I'm up over 50% now. And the more stuff I record like this, it's going to get much worse. So it would be good to...
when we were on honeymoon, we had a I forget what it was called, but it was a fake GoPro that was half the price,
yeah,
but pretty much the same. And we filmed a load of footage, like ziplining and our seaplane and this kind of stuff. And so we similarly have like this ton of like gigabytes and gigabytes. And I just stick it all on. It just didn't let it anywhere near my library. Photos, yeah, and stuff I keep. Like if I don't have an external camera anymore. I used to have like a DSLR, a point and click, but I just do everything on my phone now because I can't be bothered to carry those around. But those all go into the library. But video, if I'm doing video with a drone or video with a GoPro type thing, that always just goes on an external drive. And generally nothing ever happens to it. Occasionally my wife will think, oh, maybe I want to edit some of that video, and she'll take it and then build something in iMovie. But most of the time it just sits there. I mean, it's there, but it's not synced anywhere. I mean, it's synced up to Backblaze, discussed last week. But apart from that, just keep it there. Seems to be all right.
Yeah, I mean, I might need to make sure it's in my Blackboard that's being backed up. I mean, the other thing that's nice about the GoPros and the sort of fake GoPros, like the 8 Men, is you can do the looping, which is nice. So you can set it to sort of 5-minute loops or 3-minute loops, and then instead of recording 2 hours of solid video, it's going to break it up into smaller files, which makes it a lot easier to sort of see the thumbnails, to delete a load of, you know, delete files 5 to 50 because they're just a bit more of the same road you're going along, and cut to the sort of key bits rather than sort of having to sit there through a two-hour video that you've recorded. And it's a big file, you know, a huge file that you've got to go through to try and edit the best bits out. But yeah, it's an interesting problem. I've not had it before because, I mean, I film stuff on the iPhone, but, you know, I've never really thought about it. But having the GoPros and actually using them more, because they are really nice with the, especially when you're out on the road with the Wi-Fi enabled, because you can just sort of, you know, your phone will naturally collect to them if they're the closest Wi-Fi that you've enabled and connected to before. So it's really easy to sort of sync the stuff back to the phone. So it's become much more of a problem. And I guess because it all happens in the background, you just don't know what's going on anymore. You've got no sort of visibility of what bandwidth is being used, what battery life is, the settings to see, you know, what battery life it's. There's just a lot going on now, and I think it'll be very easy for me to fill up that space quite quick.
Yeah, my drone, I've got a Bebop drone.
Oh yeah.
And that lets you can fly with it, which is terrible because it's all motion controls and no one wants motion controls. It's
awful. You drop your phone.
Oh, it's just, I don't want to be flying something that has the potential to kill a small child.
Yes.
With my accelerometer, frankly.
Yeah, exactly.
So I found their SDK written in C, and then I ported it to Swift 1, which was not fun. And then I wrote an app so I could use one of those MFI game controllers.
Oh, wow, cool.
And now I can fly it with my joystick, which is much better because I'm a big game fan, and so much more comfortable doing stuff with, so I fly it with that most of the time, which means I don't use the app. And the app has a feature whereby you can copy stuff into library and it'll just sync via the local Wi-Fi, but I never did it because it was always quite slow. Instead, when I get home, I just plug the drone in with like micro USB, and then you can just pull it off like an external hard drive. So
that's cool.
I that's typically how I'll get stuff off of there. So I don't tend to have anything that syncs directly to my phone for libraries because our GoPro alike didn't have any Wi-Fi on it at all. It's literally just a little box that films to it, an on-off button. That's pretty. But as I say, it was half the price, and it had all the same fittings, so you could stick it in like GoPro helmets and stuff. So
that's the key thing with it. Yeah, that's, I mean, and the, you know, the quality. I say that, you know, they're crap. They're not. The 8 Men is. You can see the difference. You know, you see the difference in price in terms of quality of production and the lens and everything. But the footage you get and the footage from the GoPro, if you compare it to the 8 Men, yes, it's 4K. But the color's better on the GoPro. You know, it's just got a better quality of color capture and contrast and everything else. But for the sort of stuff you're filming, you know, you're not making movies. You're not making, you know, production films. It's perfectly good. And they're like 70 quid. You can't really argue with it. You know, you can buy, you know, and also if you're going to stick them on things or kids' bikes that you don't want to stick a £300 camera on, you know, just in case something happens. If a kid falls off and breaks their head, you don't want your camera broken, obviously.
I like those things because it means that you can just record stuff. You just turn it on and leave it,
yeah,
and do what you're doing.
Exactly.
Which is nice because I can't stand any. I mean, I don't like traveling, and I've gone off traveling in the last few years. I think it's mainly because I hate seeing tourists, and more specifically, I hate seeing tourists with phones just constantly photographing every fucking thing they see. Because it's like, well, Disney World's a good example. So obviously you want to take photos of like your kids with characters and stuff, or you on the rides and whatnot. But people that just go around photographing every single little thing they see constantly, and I'm like, you can get a photo of the castle. They'll sell it to you on a postcard. If you get the memory maker thing that they do, they give you a load of stock photographs, so you don't have to take them, because yours are going to look worse. It drives me mad. Like when you go somewhere, like I was on a cruise to, Alaska. Norway, and we're going through the fjords, and just everyone sat there, everyone taking like 200 photos a second of this bloody waterfall.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, I literally looked at it and went, that's nice, took a photo and then went away. You're not going to stand like here for 2 hours photographing a waterfall.
Yeah, it's like when you're taking pictures. It's easy to get pictures, even with kids, of stuff where you you take like 20, you know, you might take 5 shots because kids or dogs or whatever. And then you suddenly end up with, there's not enough editing afterwards. You know what I mean? It's that thing of, you've just taken 10 photos. So have a quick check right now. Delete 9, because you'll get someone sharing those photos on a photo stream. And suddenly you're looking at 10 photos that look pretty much exactly the same. There's a slight angle change on one. And I think we take for granted that whole thing of just snap, 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 because you've got so much space and it doesn't matter. Yeah. And you're not going to worry about it until you get told you've got no space. And so what would be better, but would obviously be useless because people want cloud and they want backup and everything else, is if you did have much more restrictions in terms of space. You know, the old 24 camera photos we used to have, you were precious about it. You know, it was like, quick, take a picture of that. No, I've got 2 left. I'm holding out, you know.
and I was literally going to say, I liked the days when you went on holiday and you had 36 photos you could take. Because you didn't see people with cameras everywhere taking photos, because they'd take 1 or 2.
Yeah, exactly. It was like... Exactly.
Someone would always try and take a photo with the fireworks, and you'd think, well, that ain't going to work, mate. Good luck with that. And you just get this blurry black mess when it gets developed. I tell you, one of the things they do really well there, I can't remember if we've talked about this, like the whole Magic Bands thing. So when you go to Disney World now, they give you basically it's essentially like an Apple Watch strap, just a plastic band with like a little Mickey on the middle of it. And you can get it in different colours, and on the back they'll engrave your name on it. It all comes through with your ticket. So like when you book a holiday, you'll be like, you get an email like a few weeks before, and you can go, okay, well, I'm Jason and I want a red one, and my wife wants a green one, and they'll put your names on the back of them and that. And then when you get there, you literally, to get into the theme park, you just tap your wrist against this giant, like a ball that's got a Mickey face on it. And you hold your watch up to it, and then it goes, it's got a little blue light that spins around it, and then it goes green, and it goes bing, and then the gates open, and in you go. And it literally does it all through that. But then it gets better, because that works everywhere. Like, if you're buying lunch, then that does your payment.
Cool.
Whether it's, like, snack credits you've bought in advance, or literally just charging it to your credit card at the end of the holiday. It also works for FastPass, so you set up, like, your Fast on your phone. Like, I want to go on Splash Mountain at midday. And then when you get to Splash Mountain, you just go to like a different entrance and you tap your thing and it'll go bing, and then the woman will let you in. And you use it to get into like your hotel room door. It's like your door key. It does everything. But one of the things that they do now is they have this thing called Memory Maker, which is, I think it's usually like $100, $150. And basically they have photographers all the way through the theme parks. So they'll have like 10 probably down in front of the castle. And you go up to them and you pose with your family, and they'll take photos of you with their, you know, SLR cameras. They'll take loads of photos of you, different poses and that. And then you just tap your wrist on a little pad that they give you. And then those photos are all added to your account, and you get them that you can download as like full JPEGs and whatever. And then you can pay them to like have it, you know, print an album or print it on a T-shirt or all that kind of crap.
That's cool.
But the actual mechanic is really good. And so because of that, when my wife and I go, we literally go to the theme park with nothing. Like, I'll have my wallet in my pocket, although I don't even need that anymore. I have my Apple Watch on, and I have my Magic Band on. I don't need anything else, because you just go through and that's everything you need. You can get food, you can buy souvenirs, you can get on everything, you can get your photo taken with it. It's great. But then the thing that they added recently is you get all the ride photos for free now as well, because now that, I don't know if you've ever been to a theme park recently, but you remember how you used to, when you get off like a log flume ride, you get to the end and there'd be a big bank of screens and you have to wait for your one to appear, and then you'd go and pay like 25 quid to get that single photo.
Used to be a big racket or something.
It used to be, yeah, it was, it was easy money for them. Well, since the smartphone, it doesn't work because people go up to the screen and they just stick their phone in front of it and they take a photo off the screen. And it's a real problem, to the point that one year I went that they used to have people stood by the bank of monitors to stop people taking photos. Although it didn't really work, because now Zoom's better. You can just do it from a distance. It's crazy. Like, smartphones are so good that you can... like the photo's probably similar quality. So now they don't care about that. Instead, they replace the bank of monitors. The monitors are still there, but they have a little thing underneath that if you tap it, it just adds that photo to your account. And then it's free.
That's cool.
You've already paid for the thing. But the final thing on this, and the bit that I'm sort of getting to, which is really cool, is that they have antennas in them, in these bands, long-wave antennas, and they have RFID chips. And they use that on rides, doing some really, really clever stuff with facial recognition. So imagine you've been at the park a few days, and you've posed for photos and stuff, so there's quite a few photos of you, and they know that that's linked to your band, because you've used that to sort of link it. If you then go on a ride, like the White Roller Coaster, they know that you're on that ride, because they've got shortwave aerials to detect whose bands are in each carriage as it goes along. So they know, of these 16 people, one of them is you and your family, and then they use facial recognition on your data set versus that carriage to then automatically add your photo from that ride to your account without you having to do anything.
Wow.
That's pretty crazy.
That's changed a lot since
I've been up. Videos and stuff now as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the last time I went...
they do video.
That's amazing. I mean, the band stuff just is incredible.
It's been a big game change since they did it. The video is great. I mean, you get, like, they edit it all as well. So, like, on the Tower of Terror thing that drops up and down.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's got, like, a whole 20-second intro. And it's, like, does the whole, almost like an advert for the ride. But then it shows people going up in the lift. And then you realise that it's actually you. They filmed your carriage going up and then dropping, and they'd like do the slow motion and everything so you can see it. It's really, really clever.
That's very
nice.
Cool.
Nice little mementos. So with all of that stuff, nowadays I don't need a digital camera, because I get much, much better photos that they take for me. And it's like, usually you get it for free if you book at certain times, but I mean, I'm happy to pay the $100 or whatever it is just to get all of the ride photos for free, because that's everything you want.
Yeah, I mean, and also if you've got kids as well, and you've got that sort of chaos of having little kids running around with you, you haven't lost one and stuff like that, and having those sort of the people in the photographers already there doing that stuff takes a lot of hassle out of it and stress out of it. You know, it just sounds much, much easier, especially, and you know, for the price, you can't really argue with that. Considering what you're probably paying for the holiday, it's a tiny amount of money to capture that stuff. It's a cool trick. I mean, the last time I went to Disney World with a mate of mine, I think we went to Orlando. So that was a very different experience. I think we had a video camera. I had my mum and dad's video camera, and it was a, what was it? It was a 8mm something. It was like a modern one. You know, it looked like a cassette. It was not a Philips. It was a Sony or something. But it was sort of a cassette about the size of a bit smaller than an iPhone. And I've still got the footage somewhere, but I found it again years and years ago and stuck it on a tape and sent it to my mate because there was some funny stuff on there. But it's just where it is now. It's somewhere in the attic or something in terms of trying to work out where this stuff is. And it's amazing how much things have changed now that, you know, the footage we've got now, the footage we take now is all synced up, and it just changes the way things will be accessed in the future. Just the thought of being able to show, like, my kids stuff that's been filmed, you know, now that will resolution could get much better, but it would still be perfectly watchable, really high quality, really clear sound. It's just crazy thinking. Whereas, you know, when you look at old TV footage or you look at old news footage from the riots in London in the 80s or whenever it was, you know, the poll tax, and you just look at it thinking, my God, we used to watch stuff like that? It's terrible. Really bad.
Well,
when they splice footage into movies, you know, when they splice, they'll make a movie of something like, there was a film in the 70s, I think it was, or the 80s, called The Final Countdown, where this destroyer or this aircraft carrier goes back in time to Pearl Harbor, and they interspliced it with some Pearl Harbor footage, and so you get the sort of, okay, it was 1980s, so the footage wasn't, but the film quality was pretty good, you know, of a movie in the 1980s, but they're splicing it in with footage from, you know, 1940 something, and it's just like, oh my God, it looks awful. It's the same sort of thing, you know.
You say that, but you hologram.
Yeah.
In my eyes.
Yeah, what is this filmed in? It's 4K. 4K?
Jeez.
Yeah, where's your, where?
What's a post stamp?
Yeah, or it'll be who filmed this? I filmed it. Why didn't you use a personal photography drone? What? Which, speaking of which, is what I've got coming today, which is going to be interesting. So, while we were on holiday, I was filming with the Mavic. So you've got a Bebop. I bought a Mavic Pro recently, the DJI one, which is really nice. I mean, I had a Phantom before, which is also nice, but I can literally carry all of the stuff to do with the Mavic, the charger, you know, three batteries, a second charger for the car, spare props, everything, the controller, all within a bag that is just pretty much the size of an SLR bag that you might carry a camera in. So you can just take it anywhere. With the Phantom, all that equivalent stuff was in a backpack that looked like you were carrying a fridge on your back. I mean, it was just enormous. And it was also something, just the setup time. You couldn't, you know, oh, let's do some drone footage. Okay, give me 15 minutes to put all the props on and get everything set up. Whereas with the Mavic, you sort of unfold it. You can fly it from the phone app, so you can fly it direct from your phone for short range stuff, or you can just get the controller out, and then you can fly it with the controller without a phone attached. So just if you want to race or whatever, or you can attach the phone and then get all the footage. There's just lots of quick ways you can get footage with it. So I've got some really cool stuff in Ireland, up mountains, and some what I like to call my who's the guy that did Transformers? Michael Bay shots, you know, the sort of spinning round shots. I've got these great sort of point of interest shots. I got a fantastic
explosions.
One of yeah. I got this great one of Leo on top of this sort of hill. It looked like the scene from Rocky IV when he climbs up the snow mountain and sort of holds his hands up at the top. And I got this sort of panning helicopter type shot round him. But actually, when playing it back afterwards, it was really funny because I'm looking at it thinking that, and then I sort of see the other side of the cliff that he was sort of on. I say cliff, it was like a mound. But just about 5 feet from where he was standing, there was this sort of 20-foot drop. And I was thinking, oh, great. It's going to be interesting playing that back to certain people. But talking of drones, while we were away, I saw this thing pop up that the Apple store are now selling the Hover. It's called the Hover. It's the Hover Camera Passport, they're calling it. Gethover.com. So the Apple store have started selling it. So I decided to give it a try, so that's hopefully coming today, this afternoon. And it's basically this thing that looks, I guess it's called the Passport because it probably is about the same physical, its width and height, but it's sort of a little rectangular thing that unfolds, and it's got these sort
of crazy,
yeah, it's got these sort of two in, the propellers are inside the unit, so it's safe in terms of bumping into people. But I think the concept of it is that it's not something you necessarily remote control and fly around like a normal drone. You just sort of unfold it, you turn it on, you hold it in the air and just remove your hand and it starts flying. And it learns, you can teach it your body, your face, your, you know, back of your head, whatever. And then it will just follow you. So it can sort of, you know, do a selfie, follow you down a street or on a bike. And it's like a personal camera drone. So I just thought that might be an interesting thing. And it's 4K as well, 4K footage, which a lot of these ones that you see on Facebook and that pop up are just crap. You know, they're like 1-2 megapixel things. But they, you know, they're $50 or $100. They're cheap. This is more like this is more like $500. So it's more like a proper drone in terms of quality. But it's just interesting that it was going through Apple, because usually that means that there's some, you know, if they're pushing it and they're selling it and it's almost like an exclusive deal through the Apple store, there's usually a good quality aspect to it.
Yeah, it looks great. I'm just looking at the page now on my phone, because funny enough, I made a purchase on the app this week, which I'm sure I'll talk about shortly.
Yep.
But I noticed as I scrolled down, like literally, if I go to the Discover tab, the first tab in the Apple Store app, the first thing at the top is what's being processed. Then it says iPad, flat out fun, starting from 3. And then the next thing is recommended for your black iPhone 7 Hover Camera Passport Drone, only at Apple.
Exactly.
It's like, wow, okay, you're pushing that above AirPods. AirPods is the next thing.
Yeah.
When you scroll over. I mean, it looks incredible.
It does look really interesting.
Tiny, isn't it?
Yeah, because the Mavic is nice because it's still tiny. I can still, like, we walked up a mountain yesterday. It's really funny, by the way, looking at your Apple Watch stats after you do stuff. You know, you've just done 10,000 steps and 80 floors or something like that, because we were literally going up this windy pebble path. I mean, it was as dodgy as hell in places, but I mean, you're not necessarily going to fall to your death, but the kids tripped a few times. But it was just a really long way up, and I got some stunning footage. I mean, you can get good footage with a normal camera, obviously, but I've got some amazing footage of the kids and my wife and her sister sort of walking up the hill, and I'm sort of flying up behind them, and then I sort of go over their heads, and then I'm I'm aiming towards this peak, and as you then sort of bring the altitude up, you just go, this peak sort of obviously drops in the camera frame, and just behind it is this crazy view of all the land and the sea and the distance and stuff, and it's just stunning. But I know this is going to sound really sort of privileged and lazy now, but even with the simplicity of the Mavic in terms of getting it set up, it's still a quick setup. It's still a setup time. Do you know what I mean? It's still that get it out the bag, take the little gimbal lock off it, unfold it, connect it, put it on the floor, wait for it to GPS sync. There's still a sort of 30-second process, which sounds ridiculously short, but just for that quick moment where you want to do something, this sort of thing is supposedly the sort of thing you can have in your coat pocket, you can have in your bag. You just lift it out, you unfold it, you press the button, you hover it in the, you hold it in the air, you let go, it's done. It starts following you and taking a photo or whatever. So it's going to be interesting to see.
I'm looking forward to hearing what you think about it once you've had a play with it, because it sounds great.
Yeah, and I love the fact it's 4K, so you're getting similar footage to everything else. So I like the idea of bike rides, you know, sort of bike ride, follow it behind. But it's that thing you said about having kids' heads and blades, you know. You don't want one of the kids stopping and the Mavic doesn't stop and ends up slicing them up. So, yeah, it should be interesting.
The Bebop drone is, it's not huge. I mean, it's fairly big. And it's, you know, foam and plastic.
I just
chuck it into the back of a rucksack generally. Stick it. I don't bother taking the propellers off or anything like that because it's sturdy enough.
Yeah.
So I just throw that into a backpack. And then, as you say, the setup time is probably about 20 seconds because you take it out, press the button, it starts, it goes and checks each rotor, and then it's just waiting for the phone to connect to it, basically, to connect directly to the Wi-Fi to control it. And they have a Sky controller, they call it, which I really want, but I just can't because it's about £300. I think it's discontinued now because they've got a new drone which comes with it. But in any case, the Sky controller is one where you can stick like an iPad, you get like a big view of the video. And then it gives it a 2 kilometer range because it has like a huge Wi-Fi array on the top. So you can fly it much, much further. Obviously, like with Wi-Fi, you're sort of... so it's pretty good. I mean, it's 1080p, but it's pretty low quality 1080p, quite low bit rate, I think. But it's good enough to get, like, just have a bit of fun with, really. It's much more of a toy than, like, the Phantom is more sort of professional recording thing, whereas more, it's not quite the £100 little tiny ones that don't really do very much. It's got a lot more features than that, but it's definitely in that sort of hobby toy category. It does have a really cool feature, though, with all a flight plan, where you can...
That's nice.
Basically just set up kind of like simple instructions. So you'd have like an overview of Google Maps, and then you can just go, okay, we'll fly to there at this speed and this rotation and go to this height, and then turn, and then look at that, and then fly over here, and then come back here. And that way you can get around the range restrictions, because you can fly it outside of your Wi-Fi. So I go and do it in the field. Behind my house is like a huge field where people... And I usually sort of fly it around there for a little bit of fun. And I did this flight plan when it first came out, and it's terrifying. Because I set it up, and it's like, okay, it'll take roughly 6 minutes, battery life of about 15. And so it goes up, and this is slightly illegal, because you're supposed to have line of sight. But we'll just go over that.
Yeah.
So it flew up in the air, and then I set it off. I did it all over fields and stuff, just in case anything went. And I saw it go up, and I... sort of looked at the trees nearby and thought, well, they look about 15 metres high, so I'll set it as 20 metres just to be safe. So it goes up 20 metres in the air, flies off, and then I can't see it, and then I can't hear it, and then it's gone. And then I'm just sat there waiting, and then 8 minutes later, you just see this.
And it comes.
So it came back into view. I was like, oh, thank God. My wife would have killed me if I'd lost my birthday present.
I had exactly the same thing happen about 3 days ago or something. It was at the weekend when I first flew it. We'd driven to some, and again, Kerry is just full of mountains, but it was another place that we'd gone to sort of check out. And we were looking out over this valley, amazing, you know, lake with little islands in it. So I thought, okay, take the drone up, fly it over. That was the shot that I got of Leo, actually, when he was by that little sort of... And so I fly it out, and I'm not trying to go for the island in the distance, because this island in the distance looks like it's half a mile away or something, even though theoretically, but I just figure I'll sort of head out that way. And I'm just doing this when you get then some people come up. There was like this family that were looking, and at that moment, the screen goes black. So I can't see it at a distance, even though you have the little flashy lights. You just can't see it because it's so far away. But I'm looking at the screen, and I can see the GPS position, and I can see the orientation towards the home point. So I've set my home point and all that. And there is all the software's configured that if it loses signal, it will return to home and so things like that. But the screen just goes blank, and I'm like, oh crap. Okay. So then I'm turning the sticks, thinking, well, I'll try and orientate it back towards the arrow to be back towards me and see if I can fly it back. But I'm not sure if that's working. And it's two things are happening. One, an 800-pound drone seems to be disappearing. Secondly, some people have come up to pay interest in what you're doing, and you're about to say, yeah, it's gone.
It's gone rogue.
So I press the return to home button, and you sort of have to hold it down a couple of seconds. And then it suddenly bleeps, the controller bleeps. But I don't know if the signal's got to it. And then it's the same feeling you had where I'm just thinking, come back, please come back, please come back. Yeah. And then you just hear that little buzz, and then you suddenly see it flying over. And then it was really cool because the Mavic's got this crazy, it's got the main camera, which is your filming camera. And it's got these front cameras for collision detection. The new Phantom 4 Pro, I think, has got literally five way. It's got down, forward, backward, left, right. I think the only one it hasn't got is up in terms of crashing into stuff. But this one's just got the two front-facing ones, then it's got a bottom one. And the bottom one, one of the purposes that has is when it does your return to home point, as it takes off, it records the ground. So you can actually, if it's grass, you know, you're pretty stuffed, it's going to land on some grass. But if you've actually put down like a landing pad, or you've taken off from a rock or something, it can actually recognize it when it comes back. So this thing flew from it was a couple hundred meters. It wasn't half a mile or anything, but it flew a big distance. It went up to 30 meters, which is its return to home height. It comes, which is what threw me, because I was looking for where I'd flown it, and it was obviously way above. So it comes back, and then it was literally trying to land on this damn rock, but it sort of got cold feet. It got down to about 2 feet, and then went, nope, I'm not doing that. You know, too dodgy. It says, I can't land on this ground, so I had to do it manually, you know, just land it myself. But it was pretty impressive. It's supposed to be much more... supposed to be much more reliable if you get that sort of return. You know, if anything happens, basically there's settings in there that says, you know, if the feed goes, if the connection goes, if anything fails, but you can still fly, return to home, sort of thing. But it is gut-wrenching.
The Bebop has that if you're flying it manually. So if I'm just sort of flying around, just dicking around, and then lose connection, it will stay in place. So it just stays exactly where it is. And then if it thinks that the battery's going to have a chance to get back, it'll come back exactly where it was and land, but it doesn't have any of the fancy cameras, so it lands pretty much within a meter radius of where. So as I do it from fields, I always launch off a little post that there is, and then I have to catch it manually. So generally what I do is I make it hover, and then I just go under it, and then off, and it just lands in my hand, because it's only small. But when I did this, the flight plan ones, the problem is it goes so far out of range of the phone. When it comes back, the phone doesn't connect to it automatically. And so in the flight plan, I always have it go back to where I was, fly about 2 meters above the ground, and stay there for 30 seconds. And then I go up to it, and then while it's there hovering away, then I hold my phone next to it and wait for it to reconnect so that I can then catch it or do something else with it. But that's always a problem, getting it to land again. Having the ability to say, here is my landing pad, would be great. Like if you just roll out a little sheet with an X on it and just do it that way. But it might be the next purchase. I do want a better drone.
Have you seen the Parrot Disco, the plane one? That looks quite interesting.
The one that you just throw.
Yeah, you
get
there
and off it goes.
Yeah, and the reason I thought of it was when you said about the sort of if it gets stuck or whatever, it hovers. This thing, the demo I've seen, is quite cool. So, because obviously it's a plane, you know, it needs to keep moving. Now the battery life is great because you get like 40 or 50 minutes because it can glide and everything. But the way it works is quite cool. The video I saw this guy do, you basically throw it, and because you might not be ready to fly it immediately, you know, you're sort of throwing it to get it in the air, what it'll do is, if you're not going to do anything with it, it just sort of flies up in the air and circles round, just like a bird.
Yeah,
just circles
like
around
a bird,
your... And then you can then pick it up and fly it. And that looks interesting because you can get goggles that you can put on. And, you know, it's not cheap. These things are never super cheap. But, you know, for a sort of 800 quid, I think now, you can get the drone plus the goggles, plus the controller, you know, as one package. Which, if you're into that sort of thing...
I nearly bought the Bebop drone too the other day, because I wanted the Sky controller, which is usually 300. The Bebop was 300, but Currys were doing an offer for, I think it was 550. You got the new Bebop drone, which has double the battery life, 25, 30 minutes flight time. You get the controller, so you get the 2 kilometer range and all that kind of stuff. And then you get some flight goggles as well.
That's pretty
cool.
And
it's still only 1080p, but it's like a price I could think about with that. But, have you seen how the Disco lands, the plane?
No.
In the video, they literally had a hay bale. She just lands it by crashing into it. It's like, because the whole time I was watching it, I was like, this looks great, but how are you going to land this?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's a plane and it doesn't have wheels.
And it is. I didn't realise the Bebop. You just crash it. I didn't realise the Bebop was. Is it all polystyrene or the body or something? Because the wings of the Disco are literally polystyrene. It's one of those things where it's like, you need to buy some spare wings. You know, don't just go out with one set of wings, which is what I love the idea of it, because I do like the idea of the plane, about, you know, actually gliding it, and especially with the goggles, because in the fields around here it'll be amazing to be sort of feel like you're properly flying. But it's that thing of I've always had a bad experience with remote control planes. So it's one of those things that I've seen one for, like, you know, on Amazon or whatever for 100 quid. Yeah, I'm going to try that, and my wife's always gone, it's not, you know. You know what happens with these things. Yeah. And I will literally go out into a field, and I remember taking this plane and sort of firing it up. But it was one of those ones, the sort of cheap ones, where you don't, it's not like full six, whatever they call it, six way or six channel. It's literally left and right and then power and no power. And so the more power you go higher, and the less power you don't. You know, it's that sort of really simplistic thing. So start this thing up, threw it, and it just went straight into a tree and broke the wing. And it's like, right, great. And it's just, you know, let's fly it. Crash. Okay, pick it up. Let's go home. And that's the experience I had.
My dad had a friend who loved remote-controlled planes and he was really good with them. And he, like, invited my dad to go and play with them for a bit. And then my dad decided that he was going to get into this. And so he bought himself a little training helicopter, which he didn't get on with. And then he bought a bigger helicopter, because the bigger one had some software that you could connect the controller to your computer and then had like a simulator, but it only worked with Windows, and he had a Mac. I mean, this was 2004 as well, so it was quite a long time ago. And in the end, he just didn't bother, and he gave it to me. And so I took the little one and tested that inside, because it was only small, and I flew it around a little bit, and then I smacked it into a TV, and it was an LCD flat panel. It just cut a huge gash in the TV. So then I took it outside into this little tiny, like, 1 meter squared garden with brick wall. And I got it hovering, and it was floating left and right, and then it got a bit too close to the wall, so I pushed up instinctively, and it went up, and it kept going up, went up, and then it disappeared, and then it crashed. So, and we went on a recovery mission to go and find the plaque box, as we called it, and we literally, like, two streets over, it was just load, and it's, oh, Jesus, this could have been really bad. So I recovered that, and then I said to my friend who I was with, we'll try the big one tomorrow, and he's like, so the next day, and I've actually got a YouTube later. I've got a YouTube video he filmed of me trying to get this thing to fly. I don't. It crashes horribly without really getting off the ground. So these drones are great because they're so much easier to control. Oh, yeah, the Bebop is basically the whole thing. The whole thing is polystyrene, and the blade's plastic. But then it has like a polystyrene hull you can attach to it to fly inside if you want.
Okay.
I never bother inside. Apart from when I was building my app to fly it with the controller, and I had it on a chair, just the drone, sat on a chair, and then I'd built an Xcode to my phone, and then I'd be like, okay, do the takeoff command. And all I built was takeoff and stop, just to test that, and so I pressed it, it went zzzz, it went up in the air, like, ah, stop, and then it fell back down, fell off the chair, and broke a blade. It's like, ugh, it's working then.
Yeah, you can...
The plane ones look cool.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, I mean, the Phantom, I used to buy the because you know, they are pretty powerful, and they could very seriously hurt someone if they hit them. And so I had to sort of had the propeller guards that you can sort of clip on, which are also a thing you've got to carry. With the Mavic, I haven't bothered with. I don't, only because there weren't any available at the time. There is an emergency cutoff you can do if you want it to stop, but also I don't really fly it that close to anybody anyway. I'm trying, you know, far away a distance, so you're taking sort of it's less risk. But you can buy these. DJI is selling these propeller guards that can clip on, which will completely mess up the bag because you can't really get them in. But they're also selling these cages that look... The only thing I can describe it like is, you know, Avatar, the helicopter things in Avatar. those huge circular blades. That's what they look like. They look like those, but with crisscross mesh, like on that hover passport drone, that crisscross mesh crosses over. But these things are huge, and they, I mean, you know, you definitely wouldn't get them in the bag. And apparently there's like a 20-minute, you know, they actually put a caveat on there saying, you know, this is going to take 20 minutes to set up these things. Plus they're £300 for the pack of four.
Wow.
And they reduce your battery time, your flying time, because they add so much damn weight. So it's like one of those things that, you know, if you want to film it at a kid's party or something, you're probably not using the right drone. You know, you need to use something else because, yeah, that's just insane. But yeah, you've got to be careful with them. And especially if you, you know, the normal props, they won't take your head off, but they'd give you a good old cut. You know, they would definitely cut you. But you can get people put these, you know, what are they? Graphite blades, I think. Carbon fiber blades, which are obviously much stronger and can cause more damage. You know? But there's a whole, I joined a few of these forums, you know, that you end up going on Facebook and joining these clubs things and forums and then immediately left them. Well, pretty much immediately, because they're just full of crazy people, you know, full of people that think they're proper pilots, first of all. So they think owning a Mavic
drone. I find
drone.
That of any group of people, like I talk at length about how I don't really like people in general, but groups of people are the worst. Like, it doesn't matter what you do. Like, even like any hobby that you think, oh, this is great, maybe I'll go and find other like-minded people. Yeah. You do, and then you think, oh, I shouldn't have done this.
Exactly.
Like, if you go and meet people that like Lego, for example, go to like a Lego meetup, and then you'll think to yourself, yeah, I've done this. I like Lego. I like building it, but I don't like the people do.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's a crazy combination of people who, A, take it too seriously, so they think immediately they're full-blown pilots, and they think that the way they do it is the way that you should always do it. And, you know, these things are simple to fly. They're designed to be simple. There's a lot of complication. There's a lot of complexity. There's a lot of advanced stuff in there that makes it simple. They are built and designed with a lot of things going on. You know, the Mavic has compasses. It has IMUs. It has all this technology. It even has redundant ones, so that, you know, because that can always have been a problem with flyaways and things. And there's certain things you have to do, like compass calibration. But the thing will tell you when you need to do it. That's the thing. It's like filling up your car. You know, you'll get a warning saying you're running out of fuel. Then you go and fill up your car if you want to. You don't have to top up your car every time you stop at a petrol station. You can do if you want to, but you don't have to do that. But you'll get people who go, oh, no, no, every time you take it to a new location, you have to recalibrate everything. You have to go through the entire recalibration process. And I haven't had to recalibrate it at all for, you know, going from the UK. I don't think I've recalibrated it since I first flew it, which people probably, if they are listening to this and care about this and care about this sort of stuff, will go, oh my God, you're lucky you didn't crash it when you went to Ireland, because it's a different country and different elevation and everything. The thing would have told me. There was a point, I think, when I put it on something. I was going to take off from something, and I think I put it near some metal or something, and it just says, no, can't, you know, take it away from wherever I am because I'm getting electromagnetic interference, you know, and it will tell you. And so you just move it somewhere else, and then it's like, good, ready to take off. And when that green light comes on to say ready to fly, you're safe to fly. You've got enough GPS, you've got enough satellites, it's the IMU and all that other stuff inbuilt has all passed its tests, it is ready to fly. But if not, it will say, compass needs recalibrating, or this needs redoing, and it will tell you. But you get these people that are just crazy, you know, every time you move location, recalibrate, do this, do this. So there's that side of it. Then there's the side that will mod it. They'll just modify the hell out of these things. So they'll, you know, there's pictures of people's remote controllers where they've got what I can only describe as half a toilet roll coated in aluminium foil, sort of glued
to
increase the range. Oh, I've managed to get it 8 miles away. And you'll see them saying one, you manage to see one day they say, I managed to get to 10 miles. And then 2 days later, how are you getting on? Yeah, I lost it. It's like, yeah, went 8 miles away and then it just disappeared. Well, there's a shock, you know. So they modify the hell out of it and they add in all this crap. There's pictures of phantoms that have got like additional battery packs on them. There's a guy that took his, I think it was the Phantom 4. They introduced at a maximum height, actually a software restricted height. You can't go above 500 meters, I think it's, from where you take off. You know, you can do it on a mountain, whatever, and go higher. But at ground level, when you take off. From that point that you've taken off, you can go 500 meters max, even though technically these things can hit 30,000 feet. But, you know, CAA-wise, you're not allowed to do that. You shouldn't be doing that. So they put in those restrictions. But with the Phantom 3, you could. So people were flying up to bloody aircraft height, you know, with these extended batteries and extended ranges. There's a photo, there's pictures of a guy, there's photos of this footage of this guy took which people go, oh, it looks fake, but it's like, well, that'd be a lot of work to fake. You know, it looks like it's a very good fake if it's faked. But he basically flew it up to like 30,000 feet or something. So you'll get crazy people like that. And then you get people who, you know, on social media, and I've probably done this, when someone takes a photo of something, but what they want you to actually notice is not the thing they're taking the photograph of. Do you know what I mean? It's like I've got a TARDIS in the back. I've got a TARDIS in the garden, right? But I take a photo of my iPhone arriving, and I've arranged the box in such a way that, look, my new iPhone's here, but I've made sure that the TARDIS is in the background. So someone goes, "Oh, is that a TARDIS?"
I've never done that.
Yeah,
Jason.
Is that a TARDIS? You know, that sort of thing. I'm not saying I've done that, but you know, I may have done stuff like that in the past. But you get people who, and I always take the piss out of this. So, which is probably a reason why I left the forums, because I'd probably, you know. But basically,
surely not. Yeah, surely not.
But they would take a photo of their Phantom. My new Phantom's arrived, but they've taken it literally behind a, you know, there's a Ferrari in the background, or there's 10 other drones or something else. And obviously then people go, buyer two, have you got? And so I used to just make comments on these things where I think this guy had a sofa with all this stuff set up, and he said, oh, my new baby's arrived to join my collection. And there was all this other crap. And I was just going, that's a really nice sofa. Where'd you get that sofa? I love the pattern of that sofa. And then other people were like, a couple of people liked it and smirked or whatever. But yeah, it's just, it just got to the point where somebody who goes into it can't ask a simple question, because if they ask a simple question, they just get told, oh, you should read the manual. Oh, you shouldn't be asking that question unless you're a qualified drone pilot. And it's like, oh my God. So I just ended up leaving them. Anyway, how's the, how'd the Mac Pro order go?
Ah, finally did it. I was waiting for, a number of things. A, I was waiting for, after I'd paid my match was
joyful
2 days ago. I waited until the last possible moment to pay those bastards. I literally waited until half an hour left before the cutoff for the payment, and then I made it.
I actually wait a little bit. I don't pay them on time. I mean, I know I pay a little bit of interest because I just...
All right. It's not competition.
No, but I just get pissed off with the whole thing of like, you've got to pay it by this date. The interest rate they charge is so funny. And I just figure, I'll just wait. And I get the odd letter saying, yeah, so you haven't paid.
I paid that. And then I was waiting for an invoice to come in for an app I just built. Very nice. Cool. And so that came in exactly on time as well. A client that paid within 2 hours of receipt. So once I did that, I paid my invoice, and then I said, right, time to buy the Mac Pro. And originally I was going to wait because I want the 8-core model, and because the base model's changed as we... So rather than it being the 4-core that you can upgrade, and then the 6-core you can... And the 8-core, I think, is still not actually available, but Apple commented on it, and they said, oh, no, just configure the 6 to that spec, and it'll be the same price.
Oh.
It's just that they haven't got that one for some reason, and I think it's because they're printing new boxes for them. Because obviously on the side of the box, it'll have what spec it is. And obviously the 6-core one, they already had the boxes because they were already selling that configuration, whereas the 8-core was a custom one. So they're probably just making new boxes. Also, that's the only reason I can think that they wouldn't do it, because otherwise it's the same. Right. So I went in and configured it. I was like, I want 32 gigs of RAM. I want the upgraded graphics cards. Nice. Yeah, it's all ordered, and it's coming next week. And luckily, my wife is technically a student, and so I managed to get 12% off thanks to having a UniDays account, which saved a considerable chunk of money. And then I'll reclaim the VAT on the rest of it. So yeah. It's worked out considerably, but it was still just over $4,000, which is, I think, the most I've ever spent on a computer. So I hope it'll be good.
Yeah, and considering this whole...
Go on.
I lost you then. Considering the whole not next year thing, you know, everyone's saying, oh, it's next year, not this year. So everyone's assuming it's going to be next year for the new one. It's probably a smart move. You know, I would, if I was in the market for getting one, I'd probably go for a, I'm not after a Mac Pro, but if I was, I'd probably buy one now just because they have refreshed it and you just don't know when the next one's coming. It does make sense. And yours is dying.
Just because... Yeah, I mean, this iMac is... I'm surprised it's still going, to be honest. And while I could possibly hold out until June, if they release the new iMacs then, they might not release them. And then I'd probably have a real problem. And I don't really want the screen and all the rest of it. I just want the box. But I'm most excited about having 8 cores, because that should speed up my compile times. current 4-core. The problem is that I spent all this money on it. My actual single core performance is going to be down about 20%, which is
a bit
annoying. Because it's a 3 gigahertz 8-core model, whereas I've currently got a 4 gigahertz 4-core model. So if you have, obviously, one core is going to be more powerful in my current machine, which is also newer. So it's a little frustrating, but most things are multi-core. I don't think I'm doing anything excessive on a single core at the moment. It's not like I have like an old app that is only single threaded and uses up an awful lot of that. I mean, Xcode is all, and that's pretty much the only powerful thing I do on. Hopefully it'll be all right, but I'm looking forward to it arriving. It should be here Tuesday, I think, next Tuesday or Wednesday.
Nice.
So I'll have a fun day setting all of that up.
And so you basically got the same with the upgrade, you got the same, exactly the same as if you'd bought the 8-core. So it's the same. It's just going to come in a 6-core box.
Yeah, I think so. It's slightly different because the 8-core one, I think by default, the 8-core one came with 8-core, a 256S, 16 gigs of RAM, and the dual D500s. No, it came with the dual D700s. And so I was always going to do the one RAM upgrade and one SSD upgrade on that.
Right.
So the only difference is that, but that put it, it all worked out exactly the same. It's just a case of it's the 6-core with a build to order upgrade rather than.
And will
coming soon.
Sorry, will you do the fresh setup, or will you draw from Time Machine? Or normally do these.
Things? Oh no, I'll definitely do a fresh start because I've got. I've had this computer maybe. Just like a good example, I had to update CocoaPods the other day. You know how these things work, where it's like, oh, just do sudo gem update, and I did that. And then it broke like a load of other gem. Like, I'm not a Ruby developer. And so it updated my thing that I used to build my website, which is Jekyll.
Right.
Because it updated that to a new version because it updated all the gems on my system. So everything got updated. And then whenever I compiled it, like all of code formatting was wrong because they're in a later build. So yesterday I spent half an hour going through Terminal and like looking at all the gems I had installed, and it's like, Jekyll, you've got 5 versions installed. It's like, I had to like undo them and then work out which physical ones. I've got loads of stuff like that, a load of command line stuff, the sort of thing that you know, someone says, oh yeah, brew install this to fix whatever problem, and you didn't fix a problem but move it again.
Yeah.
So the whole system's clogged. So it'll be nice to have a fresh start. And as I said in the episode we did about backup last week, it's with everything in my documents and desktop backed up already to iCloud. I mean, that'll just... so that's all my client. All I need to do is download Xcode, base everything I need to start work again. And then everything else, apps from the App Store like Tweetbot or things that I use for my to-do list, which is all synced through iCloud as well. So the majority of it is... set up. I imagine it'll take us all told from getting it to having it back up and running exactly how. So it won't take long.
Yeah, I think I need
probably,
to
probably take longer to do a backup.
I'll probably do it with my next one. And I didn't with the. I tend to do the Time Machine, which it gets me back up and running. You get a bit. I've got a bit complacent with that of crap. Like you say, all other stuff that's just sitting there that literally would have probably the first unibody I bought. You know, when they went to the new, not obviously the latest Mac Pro, but when the Mac Pro went from the removable battery to the unibody one. That's the one. So that's from that first Mac Pro, 13-inch. Since then, all the upgrades I've done, I've just done Time Machine. So literally, I've got years of crap. So I might sort of get to the point, I think we've talked about it before, you know, like putting documents and desktop in the cloud and all that stuff. Start making the changes I need to make so that I know where all my, you know, key store stuff is, that I certificate stuff and all that. And I've got everything, you know, backed up anyway, but I know where all these things are, that I have a process to try a new one. Because I normally, when I upgrade, I normally obviously get a new one. I've still got my old one. And I'll then put the old one, clear it all down and stick it on. So then, you know, what I'll probably do is just take that time to, you know, I'll still have a working machine. I can have that set up and use it if I need to do anything quickly. But in the meantime, I can take my time setting up one from scratch, because I'm sure having that nice fresh setup will...
See, I've nearly always done the fresh stuffs. If I have the Time Machine, if something has gone wrong in my current model. So if, for example, I used to have a MacBook, if the hard drive died, which, you know, spinning hard drives, they'd often die, then what I would do is take that out, put a new one in, and then restore from Time Machine, because it's the exact same machine.
Yeah.
But I never like doing it for machines that are like between versions, because I know it's the case, like when you build stuff, or your compiling apps, that they tend to optimize apps to your hardware sometimes. That's the whole point of compiling something on your own machine, is that it's built for that specific configuration.
Right.
So I never like transferring all the settings from one Mac to another, because I'm like, it's a completely different machine. Like, things might be different dependent on this thing. Like, you're going to get like a load of laptop settings come across into your desktop, which don't make sense. Like, I'm sure a lot of that is automatically fixed by Apple during the backup process, but I don't trust it. It's like, no, yeah. I'd rather start from scratch. And I used to do that when I was, a long time ago now, when I was using Windows, back in the Windows 98, Windows XP days, I was a big proponent of separation. So what I would do is I'd have my, I guess it was probably a 1 gigabyte hard drive at the time, I don't, and I would partition it into several different chunks.
Yeah.
And I'd have my C drive, my core Windows installation. I'd have my D drive, which was what I called downloads. So it's basically a downloads folder, but it was like a separate hard drive, essentially. I'd have my G drive for my games. And then I think I had another one for something else. Oh, M drive for music. So basically, I'd split out those folders. And that way, all of my music was in, games were in another. And I would periodically, I would say monthly, wipe the C drive completely and Windows fresh, just running fast, because otherwise it slowed down terribly. And so I've got used to doing that over time, like even with the Mac, everything big and important, like my external drive. So the actual computer itself is pretty easy just to wipe it fresh again, especially now you've got iCloud backups, all that kind of stuff. And nearly every app has it. So I don't feel it's an onerous task to re-set up a computer from scratch these days.
Yeah, I remember the Windows days was... Yeah, if I did it now, I think it would be a lot less time, like you say, a few hours. I think the last time I properly reset machine with Windows, when I used to get a new laptop, and I just always remember saying, always allocating a day. With Windows, it was always, you know, by the time I've installed the Visual Studio stuff I need, SQL Server, because we were developing webs, and all the little tools that we used, it was literally an eight-hour day. And I remember the times at night doing the dicking around with registries that for some reason you've decided to do because you read something somewhere that might improve if you do it. And the number of times I've completely dicked up my machine and thought, okay, great, tomorrow I'm reinstalling. Tomorrow's reinstalling day.
Remember when we used to defragment our hard drives?
Yes.
Oh, God. I used to love the defragmenter. I would just sit and watch it. I used to love it. You could just see it going along. And at the end, like that whole, you'd have like, it was like trying to explain this to someone now would be difficult, but it's like, imagine a board of like graph paper.
Yes.
And some of the dots are green and some are red. And this program would take about 3 hours. And then at the end of it, you'd have green blocks and red blocks and they're nice.
Yes.
And that did something. And it was just mesmerizing because you'd be watching it and like the little thing would flash blue and then it would change to be, you know, whatever color it was supposed to be.
Yes.
It's great.
It was like watching, it was like Wall-E. It's like Wall-E in your machine picking up a block and moving it from one place to another, seeing one little thing disappear and move somewhere else. And yeah, getting the colors at the end of. And, you know, and I don't know if it was a placebo, but you sort of thought afterwards, okay, it does feel a bit quicker. But yeah.
I swear I spent more time on Windows optimizing it to make it faster than doing anything else.
Yeah,
like I was just constantly a real like I nearly said I was a tweaker, but that has something different completely.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was I tinker with it and like change the various settings, as you said, like registering. So I used to get like PC utilities, and it used to come with a floppy disk on the front that would have like the latest versions of zip and stuff installed, so you didn't have to download them because obviously dial up was still terrible.
Yep.
And I had a great program from CNET, actually. They had a program which you'd install on your computer, and when you ran it, it would upgrade every single piece of software on your your WinZip version's out of date. That's out of date. And then it would download them and update them, and I used to love that because I could just update everything at once, and I'd be like, yep, it's going to be much faster and better now. No more bugs for me. And then I'd write a Word document or something, do nothing that required it to be any faster.
There were lots,
I still do that now.
Yeah, there were lots of apps that took advantage of that whole culture as well in terms of trying to optimize. That all said that they can make your app, you know, your device faster. There was, but I actually used, and it actually did make a difference because it sort of did a RAM caching thing. So it sort of it had this really. So we had Vio laptops, and I was running. What was it called? So the way it basically worked was it would cache regular stuff that you use in RAM. It was effectively creating a simple cache, you know, RAM cache, RAM disk. But it was doing it on top of what Windows was doing, and very good. And it actually did make quite a difference. But one clever thing it did was that if you had, because at the time you had this crazy situation with Sony laptops that you could buy, it was a VAIO laptop you could buy that had 4 gig of memory, but they only installed it with, they only shipped it with a 32-bit version of Windows. So you couldn't address the 4 gig of memory. I think you could address 3 gig was the maximum. I think that was it. You could get 3 gigs. You had this gig sitting there doing nothing. But what this app could do is somehow it could access the other gig. Just to, and I don't know how it did it, but it claimed it could. And it could store the cached information in the other gig of space. So you actually got this extra gig for caching that you could use, which seemed to make a difference. But again, it's one of these placebo things. Did it actually do it? Did it just make it look as if it was running faster? That was the problem with all that crapware that you could get with Windows. And I just you just forget about that now, you know, with SSDs and with Macs and with Time Machine. I don't even think about that stuff anymore. It's actually one of those things that whenever you mention things like backups and stuff, it's like, actually, yeah, I need to just rethink about that. Have I got everything backed up? You know, because you just completely forget about it. All this stuff's just being taken care of for you.
It's like those things that used to clean your RAM.
Yes.
You know, like, because you'd fill your RAM up with whatever this program opened. And there's a program that you would buy, literally, to give you back your RAM.
Yeah.
That the system had taken.
Exactly.
And to be honest, I have one of those on my Mac.
So have I.
I have Clean My Mac.
Yep.
And I don't think I ever use it. Like, at the moment, I'm just looking off my 32 gig. Mac OS tends to be pretty good at, you know, like, if a program is quit, it takes all the resources back.
Yeah.
Windows wasn't so great at that for... And there have been occasions where, like, Xcode has crashed or something, and I've gone in there and it's for shits and giggles, really, just to see if it does. But I remember I used to always have one of those. I had one that ran automatically in the Windows XP sidebar. Like, as soon as it detected you had less than 20% RAM, it would freeze the system and clean it. That's crazy.
And were you one of these people that had the... Because I was one of those that also had the little widgets and things on the screen, so you'd have your...
Oh, yeah.
Because you'd be fanatical about your disk, you know, defrag and everything. You'd end up, it's one of these ridiculous situations where it's like people who, you know, they get a new phone, they whatever, and they are, the battery life of this is terrible. And it's like, well, because we've suddenly got phones now that we're using all the time. We're all constantly on the screens rather than, you know, my Nokia phone from the 90s used to last much longer because it didn't do anything, you know. These things do a lot of stuff and we're always checking.
You didn't use it.
Yeah, and we're always checking if the battery is okay. We're always turning the screen on, and by doing that, we're going to use more battery. So this the sort of weird dilemma of I'm trying to optimize Windows to be faster and better, and the battery life was the other one I used to. But basically, all these things that you would do, and then you'd end up filling your desktop full of this crap that gave you stats in real time about all of these things. So your CPU's going nuts.
It was actually using battery.
Yeah, your CPU's going nuts because it's reporting the status of every other bloody thing going on. Your defrag is running in the background while you're actually trying to use the machine. And you're wondering why your battery life is dead. You know, all this sort of stuff. Because I used to do, what program? RM Clock. And you could underclock your processor. So I'd be messing around with what can I underclock it to that would be the lowest I can get it to that it's actually usable? And I'd be constantly and then you'd try overclocking, and of course the whole thing would lock up and you'd wonder if it would come on again. But yeah, that was always fun. Just trying to, and if you did, you know, manage to halve the clock speed or whatever you managed to do, you'd still get, like, you know, another 10 minutes or something. And I spent the majority of my time when I had a Windows laptop, if I ever had it off battery, looking at the battery. You know, just thinking, I've only got an hour left, you know, rather than getting on with anything. And what I noticed when I started using the Macs is I just don't look, you know, I just don't worry about it. I mean, with the new Macs, you know, the new Mac Pro is pretty good. I mean, there's lots of complaints about it in terms of battery and stuff like that. But I found that it depends on what you're doing. You know, the battery life predictor is a bit more accurate in terms of based on what you're doing right now, and if what you're doing right now is doing lots of compiling and stuff, then you've got this much left. But equally, I've had it in front of the TV, I've nodded off or something, or stopped using it for a bit, and it's just sat there with the screen dimmed or whatever. I've hit the key to get it back up again, and it's currently saying, you know, 10 hours, or I had 14 hour quote of 14 hours battery left. And then I started doing a couple of emails and things, and it adjusted slightly, but it didn't come right down. And so on average, if I'm usually in front of the TV, either doing emails or updating stuff, but not actually compiling anything, you know, I'll get predictions of 6, 7, 8, up to 10 hours, you know, easily. And it will last the whole evening and I won't have to worry about it. And I don't even think about it. But if I'm doing lots of compiling, lots of building, doing lots of video stuff, editing videos, whatever, then obviously the battery life is going to change. But with Windows, it was always terrible. You know, never get like a, never sit there and say 8 hours, and I'd never last an evening. You know, I'd literally open it up. I'd probably open it up about 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. 2 hours later, it's dead. That noise in the background, by the way, is the...
I was wondering.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how loud it is. We've got builders in, or gardeners in.
Someone drilling.
Yeah, they're basically getting the whole patio up so we can get a whole new garden landscaping done in the back. So that's what's going on in the background. Those were... it reminds me with Windows. Do you remember an app called Quem, or Chem, or whatever it was called? It was the whole... yeah, not... Be careful how you say that. It was the whole extended memory, expanded memory thing. Remember that? So when it was Windows 3, and I remember working for a company in Crawley, doing CAD stuff. We used to use AutoCAD. And we had these RM Nimbus machines that literally sounded like you were starting up a lawnmower. You know, these things would start up. And 3.5-inch discs, you know, it was that sort of thing. We're all working on... I don't think... My brain wants to tell me we had hard drives, but I don't think we had hard drives. It was all 3.5-inch discs we were working. And, so basically this thing would fire up and AutoCAD would need certain amounts of memory and everything else. And there was this whole game we used to play about, you know, well, I've managed to get, you know, an extra 50K or 20K or whatever. And it was all about optimizing this. It was the Quarterdeck Extended or Expanded Memory Manager, I think it was called. And you had to... It was like the startup sequence in Apollo 13. Remember when they're trying to get the limb powered up and they're having to do it in the right order to stop the amperage going over or whatever? And it was literally like that. It was trying to align the apps in the startup process to use the right amount to sort of fit like Tetris so that you'd have the right amount of apps fitted in that space that they would need to run in. So you'd then be able to... you know, run all the apps that you need to run. It was just, and it was a game you should play. You know, you'd add a new bit of software or add some new app and you'd have to go through this process again. And there was just a competition on who could basically get all this stuff working. It was a nightmare. Those were the days. Now it's all SSDs.
They really were.
Yeah.
See, it's nice, my iMac, I don't have to worry about battery. That's fine. I just have to worry about temperatures. That's all I have to worry about.
Yeah.
The only utility I have is a little... thing in my status bar that shows the temperature internal, which is kind of 50 degrees because I've turned all the fans right down to do the podcast, obviously.
Is that good?
Was
that hot?
It gets up to... well, it'll lock up if it gets to 68.
Oh, nice.
So it's not far off. But if I was to launch Xcode now and build something, the computer would die unless I turned my fans up.
God.
I'm very much looking forward to getting my Mac Pro and being able to not have that utility installed.
Yeah, exactly. And be able to, yeah. And it does have a fan, doesn't it? Because the fan, I think, is on the bottom, isn't it? And it just sort of, it's like a...
Oh,
it's like a,
oh yeah, it's got chimney. Loud fans.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, the Mac Pro.
Yeah, the Mac Pro, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, the Mac Pro's got a massive fan at the bottom of the trash can.
And then it sort of blows it all up like a chimney through the...
Yeah, but my understanding is it's very quiet. Like, very quiet. Especially for the amount of power that's... way that it's like in a triangle with all going through the middle and then the fan just blows it straight out the top, so it's should be quiet most of the time.
Well, the MacBooks are
why they've got such problems, yeah, because they obviously can't stick a big U in it.
Yeah, yeah,
we discussed that
because the MacBook Pro fans are amazing now. I mean, the old first unibody ones were, you know, now it's one of those things with the MacBook Pro where if I'm hearing anything, I'm wondering what the hell's going on. For a fan to be on, some crazy process or something is going nuts in the background because you just don't hear it. Now, my wife's still got her Vio, which is on the desk across from me. She'll come in, do something, and then leave, and she hasn't turned it off. And it's not even concentrate. It's just got this enormous... It's not even doing anything. It's just sitting there with the Windows desktop up. I think it's got Windows 7 on it or something. And it's just like this fan noise is incredible. And it seems to be on by default.
My wife has I gave my wife my 12-inch MacBook, decided that I didn't need a laptop anymore because I don't go to client. And so it's great because it has no fans in it at all. It's completely passive cooling. So that doesn't make a noise to it. It's like using an iPad. And that's what's so funny about using the Nintendo Switch.
You said that.
I'll be holding it and using it. And then you suddenly get this...
Yeah.
The hell is that? Is there a fly in the room? It's got a massive fan in it.
Well, actually...
But it's really weird, because you'll be playing something like Zelda, and literally, you pick it up and it's cold. You play it for, like, maybe 2 minutes. It doesn't get hot, but the fan just goes, up it goes. And then after about 5 minutes, the fan seems to turn off. And then you can play for 3 hours and never hear it again. So it's really odd. I'm not quite sure why it's there, but...
Well, the interesting
thing
is
very peculiar.
The Mavic Pro remote control has a fan in it, which is really weird, because the Mavic Pro remote control is like a really simple, it's sort of a much smaller version of a sort of Xbox controller. It hasn't got the sort of side bits. It's very slim, it's very small, and then it's got these two little things that sort of fold out and you can put your phone in, but if you don't do that, you've got this little display that's like a little sort of LED type display and gives you stats. It will give you height and speed and battery level and all the sort of basic telemetry type stuff. But yeah, you can be using it, and all of a sudden you start hearing a fan in there. So I don't know what the hell it's doing that it needs that. But anyway, it has this really weird thing they've done, which they didn't do with the Phantom 4, where obviously you don't record any audio on the drone because you wouldn't hear anything, because all you'd hear is the blades. Okay. So what it records is from the phone or the remote. It records what you're doing and what you're saying. So,
well, that's kind of cool.
Which is, it's cool if it's flying nearby, because actually where we were, there was lots of, you know, there was nothing blocking the way. I mean, I could hear them on top of a hill, you know, 200 metres away or something. I could actually hear a conversation taking place. So you can actually get something that feels like, if you're flying it near people, you can still hear them, because you're picking up, they're picking up the sound, you know, the sound's being picked up from what you're holding in your hand and not the drone. But where it goes wrong is when the fan kicks in. So there's, you know, them walking up a mountain and I'm filming them, and all you can hear is, because the fan of the remote is now firing up, and that's all you can hear. So anyone looking at the video just thinks, oh, it's just recording the drone noise. And it's like, actually it's not, it's recording the fan noise on the remote control. And it also is really bad, because I was in the middle of filming them, and this bloody fly or something decided to go and head for my ear. And so there's a bit of footage, which is this majestic footage of the kids and people climbing up this hill, and then you hear me go, get off, you little shit, you know, stuff, because it's recording the local stuff that I'm saying. So I'm thinking, I need to now edit that damn video, otherwise I'm going to be sharing that on, you know, PhotoStream, and suddenly they're going to hear me swearing.
See, I think that's kind of nice that it's got that feature, because the Bebop doesn't do anything like that. It's just silent. So you could always just strip the audio anyway and just make it like a normal drone thing. But at least that way you can have kind of like voiceover while you're flying.
Yes.
Like, oh, what's that over there?
Yeah.
Get a bit of colour to it without. It's an interesting feature.
Yeah, it's quite cool.
Speaking of fans, my gaming PC is the thing in the house with the most fans in it. 9 fans in it.
Wow.
I built it myself. And it's got 3 massive fans at the front behind it that sucks air in. The PSU's got one, who's got 3 fans on it, which blast air out the back.
Wow.
There's a big fan at the top at the back that pushes air out. And then on the top, I've got a radiator that water-cools 2 massive fans that blow air out. So the nice thing with that is that I have like all these utilities for like fan controlling, and I have it all dialed down. Well, it varies. It depends what I'm playing. A lot of the time I have it dialed down, so it's making a noise because they're all moving. And how many fans are this? There's
3, 9, 4, 8, 9.
Yeah, 10 in total. So there is noise because they're all moving, but you can turn individual ones on or off. But just for a laugh one day, I overclocked it as far as I could. The 4 gigahertz i7 processor up to about 5, and the probably about 20-25% improvement on the 1080. And I just stuck all the fans on maximum, and I honestly thought it would take off if it wasn't for the fact that it's made of glass. Just that you would not, but it sounded like a vacuum cleaner going off. It's amazing.
And did it?
So sometimes if I'm playing like a really good game that's just got a little bit, like if I'm playing something like The Witcher 3, that's a bad example, but if I had something like that and it was just below 60 frames a second, where the fans just go on full, everything gets dialed up as much over the threshold.
Wow. Yeah, I can't stand fan noise. I always hated it on the sort of older MacBook Pro I had, where I just kick in and it's just that little... It's because it's so... Because that constant noise in the background, and it's that... I just can't stand stuff like that. So yeah. I know with the new MacBooks, they did something with the fans to sort of vary the signature of the sound so that it, you know, it cools better and it doesn't sound as loud as it used to. So I much prefer that.
Yesterday, I was sat playing on the PC, and my setup is basically that I have the PC plugged into an wide monitor, and then the iMac is at an angle next to it, and I change that monitor to be whether it the PC going to the ultra wide or the iMac. So in the day when I'm working off the two screens, But yesterday I wanted to listen to a podcast while I was playing Stellaris on the PC.
Yeah.
So I'm playing that there, and I turned off the fans on the iMac so I could hear the podcast, and then I dialed all the fans down on the PC, and I said, God, this is so nice, it's so quiet. And then today when I started work again, I had to fire everything back up. I can't wait to get rid of this iMac. It's so much noise.
Well, I turned off the...
awful. And then I've got all the external hard drives as well, yeah, which are also making it somewhere else. Not conducive to a good work environment. It's why I just stick noise-cancelling headphones. Just try and blank it all out, which is why I need that Ring doorbell so that I can get notifications, so I can just sit and have my headphones on the whole time. But
those are great.
I can't wait.
Ring doorbells are great. They're not great when you've got bad connection, but I did manage to speak to one person. I think it was a postman. I think it was somebody, an iPhone case. I managed to catch him at the front door and tell him to go around the back, and then he went around the back and caught him at the back door, at the back gate, and said, "Yep, could you just leave it there?" And yeah, all these things, you know, that's that one, you know, the kingpin in all this stuff is the internet connection. So I've got all these cameras everywhere and all this stuff everywhere. The one thing I did manage to see, which is on our list to talk about, is the Star Wars trailer, which was, wasn't expecting that, and I wasn't expecting to get some connectivity.
I don't usually watch trailers. I hate watching trailers because trailers ruin everything constantly, I find. If I've seen a trailer, I generally don't want to see the film because it's like, well, I've seen it now. But I made an exception because I saw that it was going to see that. So I fired it up and it's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's very similar to the first trailer. In fact, someone did a side-by-side, which was slightly faked because various shots from the film, and then went, oh, look, they're the same. It's the same trailer. And it's not messed around with. But there are a lot of similarities between the Episode 7 trailer and the Episode 8 trailer in terms of pacing and music. But it looks good. I'm excited, you know, to hear Mark Hamill say something.
Yeah, exactly. That's the key thing. I mean, it didn't have the same impact on me. I liked it. It didn't. I got much more sort of hairs on the back of the neck with the Force Awakens teaser when the Millennium Falcon came up, you know, and it did that sort of, the music kicked in and it did, that was just like, holy crap, that was amazing. And then when the full trailer came out, with the way they did the music, they sort of did a darker version of the music as it built up, and that was just, but that teaser, that moment that the Millennium Falcon kicked in was amazing. So I didn't get that same sort of feeling, but it was, that's been the key thing with this. I think it was that whole tease at the end of the damn film where he just stands there and sort of looks at her for way too long a time that you would just go, what? You know, if you were the person holding the lightsaber, you would have gone, what? What's wrong? Why aren't you saying anything? You know, and even when it cuts to the helicopter shot going around the around Skellig, that you'd be hands out going, look, what is it? I'm giving you the damn lightsaber, say something. It goes on for too long. But anyway, I just want to hear him say something, like you say, and want him, and it's an interesting setup the way they've done it. It looks like it's a bit darker and a bit more, especially with some of the stuff that's said, but the way it's been filmed. But yeah, it does look good. But the, like you say, the thing with trailers, which they did with the second trailer. It was the longer trailer. It might have been the teaser for Force Awakens. Is you get these things now in movies where they make trailer clips. They sort of do it during production, don't they? They did it, I remember, on the Transformers film. Because if you watch the first Transformers film making of, there's a scene, there's a bit where Michael Bay goes, right, we've got to do this bit for the trailer. So they'll film something specifically for the trailer that is supposed to be in the film. But then it might be one of the shots they discount and they use another one instead. Or it might be something they cut completely. Things like, I remember Alien 3. Remember Alien 3, the stupid one where there was no weapons? But it was, you know, it's not a bad film. If you watch the full version, actually, if you watch the extended version of Alien 3, it's an amazing film. There's a much longer version that's about 20 minutes longer, and it changes the story a little bit, but it's much cooler. But anyway, there's a scene in the trailer where she says something like, Sigourney says something like, you know, you have no weapons of any kind. And the way she says it, the tone she says it, and the way she says certain words, she says the same line in the final film, but it's not the same. You know, it's just not, she doesn't say it in the same way. And it's like those things where they sort of, you know, clip it together for the trailer, but it changes. And they did the same thing with with Rogue One, I think it was, where the main character, Jyn Erso, says, well, I'm a rebel or something. There were certain bits that were said in the teaser trailer that never made the final film. And so there's all these people that were like, we really want to see, can we see more deleted scenes? Can we see all these extra bits that weren't used? And I think, well, my only assumption is because of the reshoots they did, they don't want to show you that stuff. They don't want to show you some of the stuff they didn't use for a reason. But I think it would be quite interesting.
So the thing with Star Wars is, like, Rogue One is a good point, because you're not going to get the same reaction to the trailer for this one, because with Seven, there hadn't been a Star Wars film for ages, and it was the first one that Disney were doing. And so there was like a lot riding on it being good, because it was either going to be really good or really bad. It's only going to go one of two ways, really. So when you saw it and it's like, oh, this looks really good, actually, this is in safe hands, it was kind of, you know, you can get a much better reaction to that. Now we've had Rogue One as well, which was really good, and in many ways I think is better than Episode 7. To then see the Episode 8 trailer, it's like, oh yeah, looks good, but it's not the same, like, oh yeah, more Star Wars. I can't get that excited about it. In fact, I was getting a little bit sick of all the Star Wars news. Just constantly, my RSS feed was nothing but Star Wars, because there, whatever Star Wars celebration going on, which you think they'd have on May the 4th, but it was in April, inexplicably. And it was just constant panels of, oh, this person's going to be in this film, and they're not going to be in that one. It's like, oh, just stop.
Yeah, and they can't tell you anything.
These things.
But they also can't tell you anything.
No, but now, now I know who's in, like, Episode 9. And it's like, I don't want to know who's in Episode 9, because if there's any threat in Episode 8, you've just spoiled it, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's the same reason I don't usually watch trailers. I don't want to know about it.
Well, also, some...
I saw a very good trailer.
Sorry, go on.
Oh, go on.
There you go.
I was going to say, I saw a very good trailer yesterday for the sequel to Kingsman.
Oh,
did you see that film?
No, I haven't. I've seen. I love Kingsman. I have not seen that trailer. Yep. I need to watch
that film. It's 20 seconds long.
No way.
And 15 seconds of it is just the logo appearing. And then there's 5 seconds. No, it's great though. There's 5 seconds where they show probably about 100 clips of the film.
Brilliant.
They just do it like a ridiculously fast slideshow. And it just says like, it's a real spy movie. That's all it says.
I need to see that.
Trailer.
I need to see that straight away after this. That film was amazing. I love that
film. Doesn't even give the names of the people.
Oh, really? Cool. I love that film.
Doesn't even have actor names. Has nothing.
Yeah, Colin Firth in the first one was just, you know, just amazing. I mean, the whole setup of the film was brilliant, and yeah, it was a bit of a crazy story, but it's based on the comic, isn't it? There's a comic, and I think in the comic there was something, because Mark Hamill's linked in the comic. I think in the comic they kidnap Mark Hamill or something. They're actually kidnapping. It's the actual actor. It's the actual Mark Hamill person who's kidnapped. And so in the film they did it where it was some doctor, but he's played by Mark Hamill. It was a sort of nod to the comic, I think. But yeah, it's just a brilliant idea and a brilliant concept. I've seen that a few times. But the one thing I was going to mention about trailers was pretty much you watch trailers and they either ruin the film completely because they show you key scenes that... I mean, I watched the Logan trailer. I've seen bits of Logan, but there's almost... You watch the Logan trailer and there's certain scenes where you think, okay, I think I know when that bit's going to happen. I think that's probably towards the end of the film, you know?
Yeah.
And then it just sort of... That can really throw things off. But equally, trailers can also completely throw, you know, the entire plot of a film out. They can... Because they'll use them in different... They'll use phrasing and reactions from different scenes. And so... just to get that sort of effect in the trailer. But what was an interesting one years ago was the... And it really threw me. So when I saw the film, I was actually... I didn't expect this, which was really cool. And that was Terminator 2. So in Terminator 2, there was a magazine, I think it was called Computer something, and for some reason they'd films.
Yeah, CVG.
Yeah. And so they did a... And I just absolutely remember this. And I remember thinking this and talking about this. And they had obviously done a review of the film... or a commentary on the film without seeing the film, because this became very, very clear. Because they basically said, and you got this if you saw the trailer. In the trailer, it never implied that the cop was the bad Terminator. And if you haven't seen Terminator 2 at this point, then tough, spoilers. But it never it implied that the cop was the good guy and that Arnie was still the bad T-800 Terminator. So... when you read this magazine article, the magazine article was completely reinforcing that. It said, you know, in the new film, Arnold Schwarzenegger plays a T-800 who comes back to kill Sarah Connor, and John's protector is now a police officer Terminator. And so reading it and then watching the trailer, I totally bought it. I was like, that makes sense. You know, he's back as the bad guy and he's back as the good. He's here as the good guy. He's a cop. You know, makes sense. Because they had made this whole point of, you know, ironically, he's a police officer and he's here to protect John. So when I then watched the film, I had that was that wonderful moment where, and I'm assuming you've seen it, where they're in the shopping center and they're both looking for John Connor. You know, they've both spent the morning, whatever, doing whatever it was in the day, looking for John Connor. And they he runs away. He's in the shopping center. He runs through some back door or something. And he's running down a hallway. And Arnie is walking down with a bunch of flowers with a... It's obviously got a gun in it where you find that out. And the cop's looking for him. And they're both the opposite ends of the corridor. And if you watch that scene and you don't know which way around it is, it's amazing. And that's exactly what I had. So, you know, all of a sudden Arnie says, get down. And you suddenly think, oh, fuck, it's the wrong way around. You know, Arnie's not the bad guy. And that was really cool, you know, being set up like that. And so when I was talking to people about the film, it was just like, please don't, you know, just don't read anything about it. Just go and see it, because that's that one scene is just brilliant, because you immediately, the whole setup is that Arnie's the bad guy. If you watch it, you know, thinking that. But if you obviously, if someone says, oh, yeah, Arnie's playing this, and it ruins the whole thing then. But it was really cool. Yeah, I really liked that.
I tell you who makes really good trailers that don't spoil films, and that's Pixar. Pixar are really good at doing a trailer that explains nothing about the story. Like, you look at it and you think, oh, well, that's going to be the story, and then it'll be completely not what you expect at all. And I'm trying to think of a good example.
Well, the first teaser for Cars 3 was a bit dark, remember that? Did you see that with the...
Jesus, yeah, that was like
I know they said, I mean, I didn't mind Cars...
The Sinister?
I didn't mind Cars 2, but I know people, they said Cars 2 maybe not wasn't that popular, but Jesus. I mean, we don't have to go that dark. I mean, that was horrific. And it's like, everything is about to change. It's like, it felt like it was going to be a Days of Thunder type thing, weird. Where he's going to be laid up. And, you know, the whole movie is bloody... The Lightning McQueen in bed, coming in the hospital bed, coming to terms with his existence or something. They need that sort of thing. This is for kids.
Trying to think which Pixar film it was. It wasn't... That's the one before that. That was Inside Out. And I think before even that... Finding Dory was probably... Finding Dory is pretty obvious what it was going to be about, but that was... Again, the trailer didn't really ruin that film.
Was it Up?
Like, it showed you bits of it. Yeah, wasn't Up? I can't remember what it was. It doesn't matter. It might have been Inside Out. Like, the story of Inside Out wasn't in the film at all. Like, the actual trailer...
Yes.
Was like a very, very small scene of Inside Out.
No, yeah.
Where you just saw the emotions in the head. You didn't all. And it's not about them at all. It's like, what? Completely different. And that was great because I sort of went into that thing. Oh, I know what it was. It wasn't Pixar at all. Sorry, it was Disney one where it was by John Lattner still, which is Big Hero 6.
Oh, yes.
You see that one?
Yeah, brilliant film.
The trailer for that was terrible. The trailer looked utterly awful. And then went to see the film, and it was like the best film I'd seen. It was great.
I don't think I saw the trailer,
it's because they don't show off what the thing is going to be about. Just show you little snippets, and you sort of think to yourself, okay, this is going to be a fairly obvious story. And then you get into it, and then the actual plot is completely different than you think it was going to be. Which is how a trailer should be.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I didn't see the trailer for that, but I remember hearing about it and thinking it doesn't sound great. You know, it's about some guy, some kid and some robot, and I just thought, I should be interested, because it sounds like it should be interesting, but it just doesn't sound good at all. And then I watched it. I think I watched it for the first time with the kids, and it was just amazing. I mean, it's just a great film. And the kids, ironically, Leo's got that on his iPad, on one of the iPads, and he was, that song, The Immortal or something... the big song in it when they're doing the training. Point. He's just singing that and playing that and singing along to it and loves that whole... And it's a funny film. You know, it feels like a Pixar... So it's a Disney film, isn't it? It's a Disney Studios one.
Yeah.
But it feels like a Pixar film in terms of just the...
There's a lot of crossover.
Yeah, the animation style, the characters. And yeah, it totally blew me away, actually. I just thought, that is a really, really good film. It's got a good story. I remember Inside Out was one of those ones you watch. It's like the beginning of Up. You know, the beginning of Up is like, Jesus. God. I watched Up. I never realised there was a bad guy in it. You know, I didn't watch. I couldn't get past the intro. I'd always be in bloody tears at the first build-up. Yeah. And so I never really got into it. And then I watched it with the kids, or they were watching it, and I sort of was watching bits, and it was at the airship with the end and the bad, and I'm like, who the hell's this guy? Who's the bad guy? I didn't realise he was in there. And it was a bit like that with Inside Out, where you sort of, again, yeah, like you saw the trailer, it all looks quite fun. Ah, people in little people in our heads, that's cool. And then you watch the film and it's like, Jesus, the ending gets a bit depressing when she sort of goes off. And...
Pixar are bad for that. Pixar, well, there's always someone has to die quite early on.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, even Frozen has that. In Frozen, like within the first 2 minutes, the parents are dead in a shipwreck. And it's like, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah, the kids are
Up
like,
is definitely
they
the worst
black?
For that, though.
Yeah, Up is fairly, that intro is fairly horrific.
You know, that was, apparently that was Steve Jobs' favourite piece of, absolutely loved that. He thought it was perfectly put together. I think he even showed it on stage in an Apple event once, like a bit of it.
Well, it is a brilliant piece of, because it's just everything, isn't it? I mean, it's someone's life. It's someone's whole life in the first few minutes of a film or whatever. It's very well done. Very well done.
That was one of the first films I saw in 3D. I was away on holiday. I went to Florida. And I went with a friend to the cinema and saw Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs in 3D. It was the first film I'd seen. It was amazing. And then I met back up with my parents and we were on a cruise around the Bahamas, a Disney cruise, and they were showing Up in 3D in The Mar on the Ship. And so I went to see it with my dad. We sat there watching it, getting all excited, like, oh, 3D, it's going to be great. Oh, Pixar film, it's going to be so much fun. And, like, literally, we watched the first 10 minutes, and you could just sort of see us both just sat there, arms crossed, like, not looking at each other, just stare straight ahead.
Yeah.
Wipe the tear away.
Yeah. Jesus.
God, it's awful. But all of them seem to be like that now. There is, yeah, I don't know.
Well, I think, what was the film?
That's a terrible one.
The kids watched, they like it now, but it was one of those films, the Kubo and the Three Strings. I'm not sure if I've seen all of it, but I don't remember it being that bad, but it just sort of freaked them out a little bit, I think. Maybe it was the animation style or something, but they weren't really getting into it, but they watch it now and they're fine. I remember taking all of them to see the Lego Movie when it came, because I was like, I think.
That's great.
And we had to leave.
I took my wife on Valentine's Day. Yeah. She's still not forgiven me.
Well, we had to leave halfway through because, or about half an hour, 45 minutes in, because the Leo was getting upset because the bad guy was a bad guy and he was made out of Lego. So he didn't like it. But then ironically, when we got it on, you know, Blu-ray, because I've got 3D TV, they love it and got it on their iPads and watch it all the time. So now that made me learn my lesson. So when I took him to see Force Awakens, or took him to see Force, I went first, like 2 days before. saw it by myself. A, to just get it done, and also to check it out to make sure it was okay for him to see. And then when I took him, if it was a problem, it would be like, okay, we can go. It's not. Speaking of 3D though, got a really annoying situation at the moment where I've got a 3D TV, bought it ages ago. So you know, when I, not all the time, but for the odd good film, I'll buy on 3D. So I got Force Awakens on 3D. Ordered Rogue One. Disc comes, pop it in, unreadable. Just comes up with can't read disc. The extra disc could be read. The 2D version, I don't think, could be read. And the 3D version couldn't be read.
That's weird.
Yeah, so I do a return, order another one on Prime, same thing. So exactly the same situation. So I ended up watching it on Virgin Rental last night in 3D. But I don't know what to do, because everything, you know, I'll probably try and order another one. Or there's a different version. There's like the sort of collector's pack one, and there's a normal pack one, so I might try and buy the normal pack one to see if there's a batch difference, but I might just wait and then order it again. But yeah, it's just not. Force Awakens is fine, so there's nothing wrong with the player, and the other films I've got are all fine. It's just literally this one disc.
Can you update the firmware on the player just in case there's some weird thing that's new that it didn't have or something?
There's a check for updates which just says it's up to date, so no. I don't know what to
do. It's weird.
Yeah, I just have to. I've left a note on the review on there, but I might just have to wait for sort of the normal, you know, people to order and whatever, and then order it in the future where maybe it's a different batch or something. But yeah, it's just very annoying.
I don't have a 3D TV anymore. I used to have a plasma TV that was 3D. I like watched the Olympics in 3D. It was pretty good. But I never really bothered with it that much. I thought I would do a lot of gaming on the Xbox at all.
Was that active or passive?
So when it came... which one's the best one?
I think active is the better one, because it's got the battery glasses.
That's
the
one with the battery?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
That's what I had. Active. And so when I upgraded to a 4K TV... the one that I chose didn't have 3D, and that doesn't matter. The only film we ever watched really was Avatar, because that looked...
That's great film in 3D.
It's the only film that was actually filmed in 3D.
Yeah.
And then muxed down for 2D, whereas with CGI turned into 3D. Okay. So I didn't feel it would be a big loss, and not that much anyway. But with 4K, I got Planet Earth 2 4K HDR Blue, and we got Fantastic Beasts 4K HDR as well, and they look amazing. It looks so good. Makes such a difference to the quality. Not necessarily the resolution bump, but the HDR stuff.
It's oh, really?
Really, really, really good. Yeah.
Yeah, I think 3D is dying. If you look at some of the TVs now, you know, all the 4K ones, there's nothing that's 4K 3D that I can see anyway, to be fair. But yeah, it just seems to be.
And I think that's because the reason for that is that no one is making 3D films in 4K.
Yeah.
And they're unlikely to.
Yeah.
Which ironically is a shame, because it would be much better, because obviously the problem with 3D, one of the problems, is that the resolution is instantly halved, because you get alternating pictures to each eye, so the resolution is half because they've put the lines in, blah blah blah.
Mm.
So if you had it in 4K, it would be a lot better, because you'd still get better than 1080p each eye.
Yeah,
but I don't think anyone's bothering with it. TVs don't tend to have...
But like you say, I mean, Avatar,
4K upgrade is
Avatar
well worth it.
Avatar is one of the best films to watch in 3D, because it was filmed in 3D.
Yeah.
So there's just, I remember seeing certain scenes in that where you're like looking into a room, and they haven't done that depth focus thing, which sort of the forced depth, so that you get the stuff blurred out in the foreground. You're just seeing the room as if you were looking through a window, and it just looks stunning. You know, amazing quality.
Even when we go to the cinema, we very, very rarely go and see a film. I think the only exception in the last 2 years is probably Star Wars Episode 7. Mm. We went to see that at the IMAX, and if you go to the IMAX, they very rarely show 2D at the IMAX anymore. So we see that in 3D, but if we have a choice between films, like we went to see Storks, and it's like, generally, if it's a CGI film, like if it's something like a Pixar film or something like Storks, for example, then I will see it in 3D. Been built in such a way that it's easy to make it 3D.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't go and see Pirates of the Caribbean in 3D. I did that once. In fact, I did that twice. When the Pirates of the Caribbean 4 came out, I went to see that in London at the IMAX in 3D, and I was like, oh, this is bloody awful. It's blurry and moving around, and no one looked quite right. And then my parents wanted to see it, and they live in Devon, in a small village, where they still have like a 1950s.
Yeah.
Like it has like a balcony and everything, and like a little curtain that raises up. It's
nice.
Sweet. But it's basically got like a theatre stage, and the screen is on the stage. The sun rises up, and the screen is set back. So in 3D, it was really good, because as you're elevated up on like the balcony looking down, things
cool.
aren't popping out into your eyes, they're popping out onto the stage instead.
Yeah.
So it's like you're watching a play, and that works really, really well. And it's so odd that the best place that I've ever seen a 3D film is a tiny little cinema from the 50s, but it's true, it looks so much better there. So I've never really been that fussed about it since. It's very, very rare we're going. And I wouldn't buy them anymore. But then, obviously, you've got kids, and kids like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I get the odd one. And then what happens is, if they have a sleepover and some friends over, it's an easy evening to say, let's get some popcorn out, stick these on. But you get this weird situation with these kids, and it's just what kids are like. Because the sort of 3D, we use the passive one, so it's the side-by-side. And if you then put the TV in 3D mode, it does that thing where it obviously mixes the two images. And based on the level of depth, you can sort of watch it without the glasses, but it's going to be a little bit blurry. Yeah, but it's like some kids don't get that, so they'll just you'll come in sort of halfway through the film. How's it going? And there's a couple of kids with their glasses off. And you're like, what are you doing? and then they don't sort of they can't.
They're just sat cross-eyed.
Yeah. And Leo at a time would go, I can't see the effect, sort of thing. And you're like, really? You can't see that? And it's just finding the right scenes and stuff. But there's some great YouTube videos. There's a classic one that I always... It's like the sort of party trick when someone comes around or the parents come around or whatever, and you say, oh, we've got 3D TV, take a look at this. There's a great YouTube video, because the TV can play that, that is a snake. It's like a showreel of 3D stuff. But it's really good 3D stuff. So some of it is really well filmed in 3D. There's one that's like a paleontologist talking about dinosaurs, and it's there's no forced focus, so it's just that he's pulled up in this car, and it just looks like it's all set back in the screen, you know. But there's a great snake one where the sort of camera pans down over a little, like a jungle, and it sort of pans down to some trees, and then you get this little snake head in the middle of the screen, and he starts to come out. And it's one of those depths where he literally, you know, if you're sitting 10 feet away on the sofa, he's 5 inches from your face. And everybody that I play this to sort of sits there and their heads go back like, whoa, you know, because it's really, really good. But you don't get that sort of super depth in movies, most movies. But it's cool.
You do occasionally.
Yeah, it's a cool bit of fun.
Very rarely.
It reminds me, remember in the 80s when they experimented with 3D and TV Times used to say, oh, there's going to be a 3D movie on and here's your glasses. And it was the old red and yellow, yeah. Red and green.
Green and red.
They used to play these films. Jaws 3D, God help me. But they used to play some old, there was a movie that was like a Cowboys and Indians type old Western film that had been done in 3D. And it was just the worst, or had been converted or whatever they'd done to it. But basically, everything was for effect. You know, there's a cannon rolling towards the screen. Someone's pulling out their gun and pointing it at someone else. And it was like every single moment was, we need to make this three-dimensional. And so everything was over the top. You know, here's your drink and it's coming out of the screen and everyone's like, ooh. And it was a black and white movie because obviously I don't think the colour worked that well with those systems. But yeah, nowadays...
The best place to see 3D is somewhere like Marvel Studios.
Yeah, yeah.
When they have these like 4D theatres where you go in and you get the 3D glasses and they're really good, like just pass, it's good, and the stuff comes like right out to you. So there's like my favourite one, which I think they've sadly just got rid of and I'm not sure if it's coming back, which is a shame, and it was terribly dated, was the Muppets in 3D.
Oh, I don't think
that was
that.
Fantastic. Like, it's early on, like Fozzie Bear is there and he gets like custard pie and he's got it like on a remote control and it's flying out and it like flies right out over the audience, sort of see it right above you. It's really weird. Comes right out towards you and then it like spins around, starts flying around the room. Then the best bit is actually at the very beginning. There's a door, it just says Muppet Vision 3D, and then the 3D comes out and it goes right close to you, and then the door opens and you realize it's on a stick.
Oh wow.
And Gonzo's like holding it and he's just poking it out the door towards you.
That's cool. I remember seeing the Terminator 2 ride in 3D with this is back in the 90s, yeah, at Universal, and that was the sort of first one where they'd done that sort of there's a bit where the T-1000 or T-8000 they call it else, and it explodes and so it explodes into all the silver blobules, and they then obviously fire in water, you know, fire in some droplets, and yeah, so you sort of feel them, and that was quite cool. But that was really good. That was that good 3D where it comes, I like the stuff that comes right out the screen. I don't mind watching the stuff that's...
The sort of thing that's nice for 10 minutes.
Yes, yes.
You just want 10 minutes of it.
Yeah, done.
Get a little bit. Like there's one called Mickey's Filler Magic where you like follow Donald through to classic Disney films as trying to get the Sorcerer Apprentice's hat back. And there's like... At one point he lands like in like Beauty and the Beast and they start singing the Be Our Guest song. And he like holds this big apple pie out of the screen and it comes right... You see like steam coming off it, and they blast a little bit of perfume out of the seats that's like apple and cinnamon, so it really smells like it as well. And then they do like the water effects and the and all that kind of crap, and it is very, very good. One of the best ones, also at Disney, although they've got rid of it again, was called Captain EO, and that was, I think it still holds the record for the most expensive piece of film ever made. George Lucas and Frank Coppola did it with Michael Jackson.
I heard about that.
And it's 18 minutes of 3D Michael Jackson in space, basically. It's kind of like Star Wars meets a dance movie. It's very odd. The first like 10 minutes of like, having space battles and along, there's like Jim Henson puppet tree going on. There's all kinds of shit. And then the last 8 minutes is just him dancing to kill some woman. Incredible. Incredible film, and it costs something like $2 million per minute.
Wow.
Obscene amount of money. And they show that, like, they used to show like a little bit like from the 80s, like how it was done, and that it's this massive Kodak 3D camera, like the first 3D camera made, and it looked like, you know, in Star Wars Episode 4 when they send like the mind probe into Leia's
yep
cell, like quite a sort of, it looked like that. That's what the camera looked like. Like a huge, big, spiky ball with camera lenses poking out of it. Very peculiar. That was great. But the nice thing about that was even though it was made in the 80s, it still had all the 4D stuff. So there was at one point they recover a beacon and it's got a green flashing light, and there's like a light just in the theatre that flashes above you, so you can see the beacon like actually in the ceiling. And then there's someone sneezes on you and you water spray. But the best bit, at one point, he's dancing along and people are marching, and your seat actually bounces up and down. It's on a hydraulic. So your seat starts bouncing in time with the music. And then he's fighting these called whip warriors who get out these big bull whips, and they're trying to slap him with them. And while they're doing it, there's a little, what must be a plastic tie or something on the bottom of the seat, spins around and slaps the back of your legs. That's crazy.
Love it.
Absolutely.
I've heard
crazy.
Of it. I've never seen it.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's gone again now. They had it for when he died. They bought it back at Epcot. It must be about 5 years. And it's a great shame because it was. And it still looked good, even though it was filmed in the 80s on 75mm film.
Yeah.
It's still, the 3D was still good.
Oh, anything else?
They've got a Bugs Life one as well, where they stab you in the back with little hornet things when they attack you. I won't go on that. That one shit me right up.
I remember going on one at Disney World that was Alien Escape or something, and you sort of, there's supposed to be an alien in the centre, and you'll sit there, and then they make out it's broken out, and then they fire the sort of warm steam jet on the back of, it's the breathing, you know, you get that sort of breathing of the alien.
Yeah.
And they fire on that. That's quite cool. I mean, just stuff like that scares the crap out of you. Yeah, it's good
fun.
That
would not sit well with me. Yeah, I don't think I've got anything else to add this week. I mean,
we had some other bits, but we can talk about that later or next time.
Yeah, wait for them.
Yeah, I mean, the election, we can.
I suppose we should mention. We can mention briefly the election.
Yeah, that's excited you.
It certainly has. I got very, very excited. I love an election. I'm allergic to cheese, which is a great shame. Do have it occasionally. And what I generally do is have it on election night, serve bolognese, myself a few bottles of red wine, get myself, and I medicate myself for about 2 weeks prior and after to get through it. But it's my one time of the, usually, because they're every 5 years.
Yeah, exactly.
So it pads it out quite nicely. But unfortunately, what do we have? There was the independence, the Scottish one.
Yeah.
So I did it then. Then we had the general election. Then we had the referendum.
Yeah.
The EU. And now we're having this one. So far, it's been 4 years in a row, which isn't great, but I love an election night. I stay up the whole night. I'll be up till 6 hours of sleep, and then be up at 8 o'clock to out of number 10, usually. I don't think that'll be happening this year.
Yeah, it should be very interesting. I was quite surprised when it came. I think she took a lot of people by surprise. The story I'd heard was that, or read, really consulted many people. She just sort of came out and they thought she was going to talk about something. They thought there was going to be an announcement about something else, like Syria or whatever.
Yeah, and it was a good move. Especially when the latest poll came out today and her nearest competition of Labour. So Conservatives are on 48%. Labour are on half that, which is 24%. Yeah. So Labour are as close to no votes as they are to the Conservative vote, which is absolutely crazy. Especially after 7 years.
Yeah, this is Corbyn's...
Almost unheard of.
This
Not
is
quite,
Corbyn's
but
chance.
Almost.
He's talked about it, so here you go. I love the fact that it almost feels like that. It's like, right, stuff it, let's have an election, you know, you want to see who's right for doing this or whatever, or you want to prove your point, let's have an election, let's do this. It's like a sort of playground fight or something. And then he's, you know, step up basically.
One of the best things was one of the Labour ministers came out and said, we're fighting to be a strong opposition. It's like they're not even trying to.
Yeah. Amazing.
It's it's brutal, but at least it's only 7 weeks. It's nice when you get a snack, because you get 6-7 weeks, that's it. It's just gonna, it's happening.
Yeah,
it's gonna be 7 weeks today.
And also, if they,
it's not like six, it's the concept of build up.
Yeah, exactly. But does it also mean there will be an election in whenever it was going to be, 2020 or whatever, or when was the next, is it next, what was
no the... So it would be 2020, May 2020.
Right.
So they basically... What used to happen is that the Prime Minister had up to 5 years, and at a point in their choosing, they could call an election.
Well, yeah.
Specifically, they have to ask the Queen if they can call an election, but she says yes.
Yeah.
So they could pick and choose. So, some people went the full term, like John Major, 2-7, just did the full 5 years because he had no chance of winning. Whereas others might be a bit more tactical and go, well, I'm going to call an election to solidify slightly. And then Cameron changed all that and was like, no, we're going to have fixed terms of, because of the coalition government, they wanted to kind of make it, I guess, easier so that there was no, like, if there was problems, they wouldn't just call an election.
Yeah.
So I imagine it was all because of the coalition. So no, we'll have them fixed every 5 years. But then you can overturn that. So the date was already set in advance for a long time, so it's 2025, etc. But you can overrule that if MPs say, yes, you can call an election now, basically. So I think what will happen is that this election will happen and the next one will automatically be scheduled for 2022.
Right, okay.
So unless, because it'll be 5 years since the last one.
Yeah.
So unless they repeal the entire legislation, which then it will happen in 5 years, or the next time the MPs vote in two-thirds favour to allow it, which, if you have a majority of 100, becomes a lot easier.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah, they could either reset it or they could just do another snap one in 2020 and that effectively resets it back to that timeline. But, yeah, I just wonder, because of the phrasing that was being used, you know, it is a general election, but everyone was calling it a snap election, which made it sound like it's... the other election would still happen, and this is just one in between, you know, interesting.
No, it is a full general election. They just call it a snap election because traditionally you would usually know when it was going to be, like you'd announce it quite a long way out.
Yeah.
But sometimes you'd be like, nope, it's happening in six weeks was the minimum amount of time that you had to give. You have to dissolve parliament and all.
Yeah.
Which is why it's nice that it's so quick, because last time it was in May, but people start preparing for it in like November, December,
yeah,
and you get the campaigning and no work is being done because everyone's focused on that. So it's kind of nice to have a quick one because it's like, yep, get out of the way. Like,
yeah,
the US exactly. election is crazy, the amount of time. It's crazy on many fronts. One, it lasts a year, and then two, someone gets elected in November, but they don't start the job till January. And it's like, why?
Yeah.
I love the fact that in British politics, if Corbyn were to win, unconceivable, but if he would, then literally on the morning of June 8th at 8 o'clock in the morning, so Theresa May would say, yep, I concede.
Yeah.
And by 10 o'clock, she'd be out.
Exactly.
And he'd be in. And it's like, yep, kick it off, get going.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It seems crazy to me that you wait 2 months.
That should be interesting.
Oh, exciting times.
Cool.
Exciting times.
Okay.
Well.
All good.
Yeah, let's leave it at that. And I look forward to hearing about your drone.
Yep.
I'll look forward to telling you about how I've returned my Mac Pro because it's shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, the iMac comes out within... as long as if there's an iMac you're interested in, it comes out within 14 days, you're good.